Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Coach K and Joe Show. This week's guest, Butler Assistant Coach Michael Lewis, Jasper Great Mike Ballinger, WAXL Play-by-Play Man Steve Kolb, and DC Broadcasting Sports Director Kurt Gutzel. The Coach K and Joe Show is brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Fence Company. Now, here's Joe Milligan and Ken Coach K Schulteis.
And this is Joe Milligan, joined by Coach K Ken Schulteis. Welcome to the Coach K and Joe Show. Coach, I put you a little song you recorded back in high school in the background. That's your voice. Do you recognize you when you recorded that?
Yeah, but you know what I forgot to do? I forgot to get any rights to any future income, and so I get nothing out of it, Joe.
Yeah, I think Luke Puppy Dog Holes copyrighted that, and he's living high on the hog right now off that song.
I don't know. Some of that music coming into the opening, I'm not sure about that, but we'll discuss that at one of our highly attended staff meetings that you showed on Facebook the other day.
Did you see Teo's girlfriend sitting there? We've recently hired her. She was sitting there. She was in the picture.
We'll touch on that later on in the show for sure.
You know what, though, about that, the best part of that Facebook page is I might have made a little money off of it because now Eddie Schulteis wants to buy my kitchen table and chairs.
There you go. But I'd hold out. He's always looking for a good deal, so be careful on that. Hey, we've got a great show lined up for us today, and in a few minutes we'll be getting to our first guest, Michael Lewis, Butler assistant. Big game up at Hinkle Fieldhouse in Indianapolis this weekend with the number 8 Gonzaga Dogs coming in to play the number 13 Butler Dogs. So that should be a great game. We also have Mike Ballinger, a great athlete, all-around athlete at Jasper High School, went on to play basketball at UK and Western Kentucky University and pitched a little bit, I believe, at Western before he had some arm problems. But there'll be a lot to talk with him about. And of course, Steve Kolb will fill us in on Heritage Hills and South Spencer and how things are going there. One thing I do want to talk about, Joe, before we go to our first break and bring Michael back. Last week, if you remember, I talked a little bit about my father-in-law, Larry Bartley, was battling stage 4 lung cancer, and I just wanted to let the people know that some of them had sent me some very nice emails and text messages. Larry did pass away this week, and he will have his showing today at Becker Funeral Home downtown Chapel in Jasper from 2 to 8, and we will have the funeral on Saturday. He was just a great father-in-law, and I know my wife and her brother, it's just a sad time for the family. We are blessed that he's moved on and he's out of pain, but obviously when the people that remain after someone passes on, the heartache is there. But as we mentioned last week, Joe, he did a lot for the community and always sponsoring Little League teams and softball and different community events. He was an owner and operator of B&G Tire for many years, and he was very, very involved in the community and very involved in his children's lives, always giving them support. So those who have lost a loved one to cancer or to any illness, and those who are going through it with a loved one now, you know, we pray for you and hope that the best for whatever the outcome may be. Going on to some of our guests, I think the interesting thing, you know, being able to bring Michael back and talk about this big game coming up and then moving on and talking a little bit with Mike Ballinger. Mike Ballinger is one of the people, athletes, when we talk about our Glory Days segment, that is most asked about. A lot of people from Jasper and the local Indiana, Southern Indiana area frequently ask about Mike Ballinger and what he's doing now and how great of a player he was. So it'll be interesting to bring Mike back in a little while and talk to him. But at the after this break, we're going to be talking with Butler assistant Michael Lewis. We'll talk Butler Bulldogs and Gonzaga in just a couple minutes. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com.
We're on double secret probation, whatever that is. We can't afford to have a toga party.
You guys up for a toga party?
Toga! Toga!
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show, and we're joined by Butler assistant coach for basketball, Michael Lewis. Michael, it was great to see you at the 100-year reunion of Jasper basketball a couple weekends ago.
Well, that was a great night. I think everybody in attendance obviously had a good time, and what a special night it was, and a big thanks to Slick Weber for organizing. I think that was something that was long overdue, and hopefully we can continue to get together in the future and celebrate Jasper basketball.
Well, Michael, when we talk about basketball in general, there's a lot to celebrate going on for you right now. Big game coming up at Hinkle Fieldhouse with the number 8 Gonzaga coming in, Bulldogs to play the number 13 Butler Bulldogs. So a bunch of Bulldogs going at it at Hinkle Fieldhouse on Saturday.
Yeah, we're excited about it. It's it's a big game for us because it's the next game. You know, it's the game after Richmond and before LaSalle, so it's on everybody's mind. I think our guys have done a good job of staying focused this week and got a good win against Richmond, and came out and played hard and competed, without Rodney being available to us. And they've had a good focus throughout the week, despite the circus atmosphere that's going on around Hinkle right now.
Well, I think it kind of speaks to the maturity of your basketball team. You've got the ranking. You've been playing fairly well as a complete team, taking on the opponents as they come. Then Rodney gets hurt, and then the question becomes, how does this team bounce back? You're in conference play, and for me, from my standpoint as a coach, I would look at that and say, I've got to feel pretty good about how we handled some adversity and the maturity and confidence of our basketball team.
No question. I think, when Rodney went down at Dayton, our guys were the first ones there, by his side there on the floor and came over the huddle. You could tell they were a little shooken, by what they saw, what Rodney had said. They really kind of move to the next play. Once they saw that Rat can move his extremities, they just kind of focused on what they could control, and that's how they went out and played and finished the game. The neat thing was kind of after the game, they were Rodney had been taken to the hospital, and those guys were not leaving Dayton without him, and our bus went to the hospital, and we sat outside for about 45 minutes, and Rat came walking out and got on the bus, and everybody was happy, and we rolled back to Indy as a team, and they came out and prepared and for Richmond because it was the next game, and followed a game plan, again to the team, and grinded out a win against a team that could cause you a lot of different problems by the way that they played both offensively and defensively, and came back to practice tomorrow and started diving right into to Gonzaga, and we'll practice again today and be prepared for tomorrow night.
I've got an email here, someone asking, Rodney's physical condition, and when do you expect him back? If you know when you expect him back.
Well, we don't know. You know, it's whenever you're dealing with the neck and spinal cord type of injuries, you just don't know. You know, he took a pretty good shot if you saw the replays, and he's got to go a certain amount of time without any symptoms or pain. You know, this is not something you want to mess around with, and we've got great care here, you know, with our doctors and training staff, and Rodney did ride a bike yesterday, so he's kind of starting the first phase of his progression back, but it could be anywhere from 10 days to a month. I mean, who knows? The good thing is that he's very lucky to come out as unharmed as he was, and it's just good to have him bouncing around the office and moving around and standing around practice and helping the guys. He's been a great teammate this last week.
You know, this matchup between Butler and Gonzaga, I think this is what's great about college basketball. You know, you we can talk about the Big Ten teams and the ACC teams and those types of things, but you take two what are considered smaller Division I schools, one sitting at 13, one sitting at 8, and here they are clashing in the Midwest at historic Hinkle Fieldhouse. I've got to believe that the Butler campus, and I know it's just a game, Michael, it's just a regular season game, but I've got to believe the Butler campus and Indianapolis in general is pretty excited about this matchup that a lot of people are going to be able to see on TV as well as watch it at Hinkle.
Well, there's no question. There's a buzz, around. And I think anytime you get two good college basketball teams like you're going to have on Saturday competing, it brings something to the table. And then you throw the whole, ESPN Game Day circus coming in Saturday morning for their live show, and the fact that ESPN will be here broadcasting that as their highlight game of the week. All that stuff is good, but I think both teams. I think one of the reasons why both teams have been so successful is that they have the ability to focus on the now and what they have to do to get ready. And I know Gonzaga played last night, and they're going to jump on a charter flight and get here tonight. But just the ability of those players at that age to focus on the now and what they have to do to compete while all the other circus and is going on around them, I think, is what makes both teams so special. And I think you can put that responsibility right on to Brad and Coach Hugh, that they do such a good job from top to bottom, just keeping everybody on the same page.
Yeah, that was going to be my next comment. And when you look at Coach Few and you look at Coach Stevens, very similar in their approach to put together a top-notch program with the right kids that can come to their prospective schools and do what need to be done off the court as well as on the court, and then you couple that with the confidence to say we will go play whoever we need to play, wherever we need to play, whenever we need to play, in order to build the program up and create an expectation for the players that come in and the recruits that you go after. We're going to play top-notch basketball. And that's what's exciting to me when I look at this matchup with Gonzaga coming into Butler. Two coaching staffs that aren't afraid to play whoever they need to play, whenever they need to play.
Well, I think as a player, that's what you look forward to. You know, you look forward to and you get excited about playing in games like this, you know, games that are relevant on a national stage, and we've been very fortunate this year to play in several of those. You know, whenever you go to Maui, you know, and you play games, you know, on ESPN like Vanderbilt, and then the game against Indiana, and this one, and so on and so forth. Gonzaga's done the same thing. You know, they played in the exempt tournament in Orlando. It's a credit to both programs for not only building themselves up to be in positions to get invited and play in games like that, but then also to continue to do so. And I think that's what makes college basketball exciting. I think that's why we're able to attract the players that we do because they look forward to games like this. I remember when I played, there's something special about the bigger games that carry a national relevance, and we're excited about Saturday.
And before we talk a little bit about your expectations of what Gonzaga will bring to the court and how you guys are looking at that, I've got to jump in on this part because this is a major part of what you do as part of the staff and how Butler continues to propel and improve, and that's recruiting. This has to be a great game to atmosphere to bring potential recruits, interested players, or maybe somebody on the line to come in for this game, or even if you've got some guys out there that you're talking to turn on ESPN and see Butler in the limelight, game day, and it's got to be an important part of the recruiting process to have a situation like this.
Well, I think it's important for Butler as a whole, not only, for our program, other sports, but just general students that are looking at Butler as a possible destination. I think it's also good for college basketball fans, our alumni, the whole deal. When you have something as big as College Game Day coming to your campus and all the exposure that comes from that, it sheds a lot of attention on Butler. And obviously Butler's a special place, has had a lot of success, and deserves all the attention that they're getting and that we will continue to get as our team is successful. It's a big deal because of the exposure, what it can do for both of our programs, Gonzaga and ourselves, as far as an exposure standpoint, and not just our recruiting, but I think it's interesting to see that the overall impact that it has on the university.
Mike, let's talk a little bit about the Saturday's game. Gonzaga comes in. They really have a well-rounded team. They're on a roll. I don't think they've lost since the Illinois game at the Maui tournament. They played, as you said, Portland, last night, and had a pretty solid win. They've got some size. They've got some quickness. They've got a decent bench. How does Butler size up with this Gonzaga team that you'll be playing on Saturday?
I think Gonzaga is very good. I think they're talented in multiple positions. We both our last loss has both come against Illinois. So we've put a string of wins together both for both programs, and they do. They have great size. They're huge on the interior. They have the capability of playing small as well as playing big. I think they prefer to play to play big. They're just talented at a lot of positions. I think Pangos is special at the point guard's position. Elias Harris is talented, a combo forward as we're going to see throughout the year. Olnick is playing at a high level, and then they have guys that fill their roles that. In a lot of programs that they may be the go-to guy, but because they're on such a talented team, they become a lesser option, but are just as dangerous. I think this they pose a lot of problems for us both on both ends of the floor because they have the ability to play multiple lineups and come at you in different ways. They score the ball at a high rate. Obviously we're going to have to do some things to try to slow them down. And then we're going to have to be able to put some points on the board as well.
Yeah, that's an interesting I knew you were going to say it. I just didn't know when, and that was controlling the tempo of the game. And sometimes people think when we talk about controlling the tempo of the game, we're talking about slowing the ball down, and that's not necessarily what we're talking about. We're talking about moving the basketball, making good use of that shot clock, not taking ill-advised quick shots, not putting ourselves in a position where – a team that wants to get out where they can get run outs. There's more to controlling the tempo or controlling that clock than just holding the ball.
No question. You last time that I think we spoke was before the IU game or just after, and we had talked about how tempo was so important in that game. And we felt like we controlled the tempo of that game for a majority of the contest. And you look, I think the score was in the 80s. So from a scoring standpoint, you would almost think that would have favored Indiana. But we felt like we were very opportunistic in how we attacked them offensively and having the ability to score the points. It's going to be the same type of deal with Gonzaga. Like I said, Pangos really pushes it in transition. They're very good in transition, and they allow their defense to turn into some easy points. So we do have to control the tempo. We've got to be smart to explore in our transition. Obviously, you don't want to turn down points, especially at this point with the guys on our team. We've got to be able to put points on the board when they're available. But when there's not, we've got to be able to know what a good shot and a bad shot is. Looking at our game last year, we felt like we forced some things on the road at Gonzaga that weren't necessarily there. So we're going to have to be smart in our attack, explore in transition, make sure we're able to score in transition when the opportunity is there. But when it's not, work and force them to guard for some time and make sure we get the type of shots from the guys that we want shooting at the right spot.
Yeah, and your big guys, your rebounders, Andrew Smith, those kind of guys, they got to come up for you big. I'm not talking just about getting a lot of rebounds. I'm talking about making sure that Gonzaga doesn't get those extra looks. And on defense, making sure Gonzaga's bigs aren't getting easy looks, much like you did with IU and much like you did with Cody Zeller. Make those guys have to work for everything they get. And, again, that's part of tempo as well.
Yeah. It's going to be a game of runs. Anytime you got two good teams going at each other, you're going to exchange some punches. And you just got to continue to stay the course and keep grinding it out. Andrew Smith has really taken off here, and he's playing at a very high level. We need to continue his play. And I think the interesting thing is you look at our senior leadership with him and Chase, and those guys have been a part of two national championship games. So they kind of keep some of these younger guys grounded with the circus atmosphere kind of going on right now. And they keep them grounded as far as the success that we've had and friends coming out of the woodwork and ticket requests and everything. And they remind them that, hey, who was calling you when we got whipped by Xavier? Stuff like that. It's been interesting to see that their leadership and Andrew's played a major part in that, along with Emerson Camp and Chase DeGaul and keeping everybody focused. But he's played at a high level. Roosevelt's done a great job for us. Those guys are going to have to play well on Saturday, and just like we've told them. We've got good players. We don't need anybody to come out and do something extraordinary. If everybody just continues to play their role as well as they can play it, it'll be good enough.
Sure, and if they're playing their role and doing the things they need to do defensively and share that ball, they'll pick up the points that Rodney would have gotten. From a standpoint of, have you set your lineup for tomorrow? Who's playing in Rodney's position?
Well, I would. We haven't completely set it yet. We've tossed some ideas around, but I don't think. I think at this time of year, you've settled into who you are, and
yeah.
I would not see us going away from who we are. I would probably predict a lineup very similar to what we threw out there at Richmond, and just continue to keep this thing rolling along and try to improve each day and go out and compete tomorrow and then compete next Wednesday and next Saturday and keep our eye on the ultimate goal, and that's to get in the NCAA tournament and be playing in March. And once you get in there, just see what we got and see if we can't make a little run.
Well, before we let you go, Michael, just real quickly, I know we're going to be talking about some of the IU freshmen later on in the show. Can you assess your young guys for us just quickly, how they progressed, what they brought to the team and their maturity at this point in the season?
Well, I think Kellen Dunham has been very good. You know, he may not have be shooting it from a percentage standpoint as well as you know, some people have thought or maybe he even anticipated, but I think he's you know, coming along really well for us. We've got to continue to have him stay aggressive. You know, he's like any shooter. You know, you're going to have some ups and downs, but you know, you got to think the next one's going in, and he needs to be aggressive for us as we continue throughout the year. You know, Devontae Morgan has not seen a lot of time, but we're really seeing him progress in practice. He's becoming more aggressive driving the basketball, which really fits his style of play, and he's obviously our best defender on that practice squad, and maybe second only to Roosevelt on the team. And he's working. He's coming in getting some extra work all the time, and has a desire to be good. So it's kind of been neat to see his progression. So we're happy with both those guys, you know, they came here to play in games like we're playing in tomorrow.
Well, it's going to be exciting. I'm really excited for it and look forward to seeing all the build up and the game played. And again, it's just one regular season game, but it's exciting for college basketball. Michael, you know, you finished as the number one career scoring leader in Jasper High School history, and our guest following you today is the gentleman you passed, Mike Ballinger, on our Glorious Day segment. So it's pretty exciting to have the 1 and 2 all-time scorers at Jasper on today.
Well, you know, Mike and I have exchanged some emails here in the past year. He kind of keeps me informed on some players over in his area, and I appreciate that. But what I appreciate more was how good a player he was, because he as good as he was, you know, I was able to appreciate that. But more for me was he was able to set a goal for me, you know, because I was able. We had moved to Jasper when he was playing, but when I came in, you know, he's the guy you heard about, and yep. So he kind of set a benchmark for me to work towards. So always kind of looked up to him from afar, and it's great that he's coming on the show.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. I got to play with him, and I got to coach you, and maybe I should be taking the credit for it. You have a great, great game tomorrow, and no matter what, you guys are going where you need to go, and I just compliment you and the staff and wish you the best of luck, Michael.
Well, I appreciate it. Hopefully we can keep it rolling.
We'll talk to you later in the year. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean, modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care. Creating beautiful smiles.
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan, and we are now joined by what I consider one of the greatest athletes to ever wear the Jasper Wildcat uniform, a guy who made people around him, including me, people think they were better athletes than they really were because he was on the court or the field with us. Mike Ballinger. Mike, how you doing?
Great, guys. Hey, thanks for being on. I appreciate you guys reaching out to me, and I've enjoyed so far listening to the show and looking forward to it.
Well, Harry, as we fondly called you and in high school, it's great to have you, and we've been looking forward to having you on the show because you are one of the former athletes in the area that people ask about. And so when they talk to me, well, you played with Mike Ballinger, what's he doing now? And I'll say, well, I think he's here and talk a little bit about that with him. But for those people listening and going to be listening on our podcast, before we get into your career in high school and college, where's Mike Ballinger today and what's going on in your life?
I am living in Columbus, Ohio. I've been here, let's see, my oldest is for. So I've lived here 16, 17 years in Columbus, married with two kids. I got an eighth grade boy and a fourth grade boy. So do some real estate, own and manage commercial and condo and apartments for myself and also some clients. So I stay busy with that. But, you know, the good thing, I got a wonderful wife, got two great boys. Both of them play, I would think probably baseball is both their favorite sports. Both of them right now, they also play football and basketball. But I think probably baseball, if you said, hey, what would be your favorite sport for these two kids, I think they'd tell you baseball.
Well, that's really exciting. I knew that you were in Columbus and you were married and some of your business ventures and things that were going on, but I did not know about the two youngsters, and that's awesome. They've still got some years to get better and improve. And speaking of that, you're now a dad. You've got a couple of youngsters that you're bringing up, and obviously you were a pretty good student, Mike. You weren't a slouch in the classroom, outstanding athlete. I know your dad, Hugh Ballinger, loved you. He used to call you Mick, and I know he spent a lot of time with you and took you to the softball and different things he did and spent time with you throwing that football and that baseball and those types of things. Are you able to find time with your boys the same way?
I am. I coach both my boys play travel baseball, and I coach them for that. And you know, we don't travel very far. We go to, you know, some of the other communities in the area and play. But, you know, I appreciate the words Michael said before he signed off a while ago. And it's funny because he talked about, you know, having someone to look up to. And, Kenny, you'll remember this, and Joe too, because, you know, when we were kids, there wasn't anything better to do except to go see the high school teams play, whatever sport they were playing, football, basketball, baseball. And, you know, with your dad being the head coach when we were 6th, 7th, 8th grade, you know, that's all we did. We'd go to the old gym, watch the high schools. You know, I remember, you know, talk about people that you wanted to be when you were in 5th grade, 6th grade, was your brother, Brad Vogel, Slick Weber, Kevin Manley. You know, those guys in the early 70s to, you know, obviously until we got in high school in in the 80s, late 70s. It was such an important thing in my life to be a part of sitting there watching those guys play basketball, watching, you know, Mike Loftus, Tony Ahrens, Mike, you know, all those guys that played football, and, of course, all the guys that played baseball. So it's such a huge thing in my life, the high school sports atmosphere in Jasper. It was everything to me. And, you know, I try to teach that to my kids just from a standpoint of, hey, if you want to play, you know, let's go out and practice, let's take some BP, let's throw the ball. And it's been really fun watching my two kids play baseball and some other sports.
Yeah, and you know, Mike, you make a great point, and we try to talk about this weekly on our show, the importance of people getting out whenever they can, and especially in the smaller communities, to watch these high school players and make connections with them. And I mean, there's so much college and pro on TV, and you can make a connection, but you can't make the same physical connection and personal connection as you can with the high school players that are in your community. And even my brother Don and John, and who are up in the Indianapolis area, as their kids were coming through, connecting with the high schools that they were going to go to, and now they're in high school and just watching those play. It's just a great way for those young men to like Michael said, set a goal, want to shoot like that, want to play, handle the ball like that, and so on and so forth. And I know when we were growing up, and in high school playing together, and obviously there wasn't a young boy and even a young girl, because girls basketball was starting to get going, who didn't want to emulate Mike Ballinger out on the court or out on the pitcher's mound or at the home plate or throwing a football. When you think about that time, Mike, I think a lot of people would want to know, how when you look back at that, how did you feel then, and how do you look at that now, that you had so many people looking at you and looking up to you?
Well, I don't know if I ever really thought about it when it was actually happening. I just remember, and again, this is so important because I think of your brother Jim and Brad Vogel and Slick and Kevin Manley. And, you know, I hated that I missed the anniversary because Slick was able to send a bunch of pictures, and, you know, you get a chance to see Coach May and, you know, all the good things he did for me when I played for him, and of course, Coach Brewer and also Coach Howard. I mean, when I think about my high school coaches I had in those three sports, I don't know if anybody was lucky enough to have as three great coaches as I did. I mean, you think about what Coach Brewer accomplished for football, and Coach May was great for me, and, of course, Coach Howard did a great job with the baseball program. I just, you know, the thing that I hate the most about now, it seems kids want to specialize and maybe just play one sport. You know, I remember playing football, and the game would be over on Friday. The season would be over. You know, Joe and I maybe, you know, we finished 8-2 or whatever we finished. We didn't make the playoffs. And that next morning, it was basketball practice time. You know? And as soon as basketball was over, you know, if we lost in the sectional or the regional, whatever it was, that next Monday, guess what? Baseball started. So I don't remember ever really, until my senior year, I don't remember ever really going home one day after school. You know, it always seems like there was a practice of some type. And I think that was, you know, what my dad kind of pushed, and I loved every second of it. I truly loved to play baseball. I loved to play basketball. I loved to play football. The competition part was so great. You know, you think about beating the other teams in the county in basketball or football or baseball. That was huge. That was everything. You know, it was just the most important thing. And, again, it was because when you and I and Joe and everybody else was 8, 9, 10, 11, we'd go watch these guys who were juniors and seniors in high school. You know, the Danny Smiths, the Mike Loftus, the Tony Aarons, you know, your brother, Brad, all those other guys. I mean, you wanted to be those guys. You know, you wanted to be a part of Jasper High School football or Jasper High School baseball or basketball. That's what you wanted to do. You grew up, and, you know, I tell people now that, you know, when they find out I played basketball in Indiana, they're like, and I'd say, oh, man, we had a gym that seat 5,000 people, man.
Yeah.
You know, we'd have, you know, and they look at you like, really? Because I go to games all the time here, and, you know, gym seats 800-900 people, and there might be 30 students there, and there might be, you know, the parents and maybe a few other teams. It's just not the community feel that it is in Jasper, and that's everything. I mean, I just think it's so, you know, as great as it is, the community that we live in now, it would be so great for my kids, my two boys, to see what it would like to be in, you know, a Jasper or somewhere where the high school is just everything. I mean, academically it's important. The teachers are important. The sports, the coaching, it's just, you know, I mean, it was so, everything that I accomplished later on in life is because of the experience I had in high school at Jasper. There's no question.
Well, you know, Mike, one of the things that you just went over and talked about is one of the points I wanted to talk about with you, and that is you played multiple sports, but you also would play slow pitch softball, you'd go bowling, you'd go out and hit the tennis ball. I mean, there was a constant flow of some type of physical activity and competition when we were growing up, and the multiple athletes were great athletes, but they were great players in their sports as well. And I think back, Michael Lewis played several sports. Scott Rowland played several sports. These are guys I coached. I played with you. You played several. I guess the correlation I'm trying to make is that too many people think, well, I'm going to concentrate on baseball. I'm going to concentrate on basketball. I'm going to concentrate on football. But playing multiple sports at a young age is great for you mentally and great for you physically. And as you said, there weren't many days that you probably said, I don't want to do this. It was just, we're going on to the next thing and we're going to compete.
No, I loved every second of it. And Kitty and Joe, you know, the biggest thing about this, and I don't want to say I've had arguments, but I've lived in 7 or 8 different states doing some different jobs, and I've met a lot of coaches in different states, and, you know, almost all of them talk about specializing, and I come back to this. You know, you could go to a high school game today anywhere in DuBois County, and you'll see those kids who maybe only play just basketball. They've been practicing basketball. They played AU in the summer. Fall came, and they ran sprints, and they lifted weights, and they shot free throws and three-pointers. But you can watch them, and they will make some of the same mistakes on the floor that we made 30 years ago when we played. So I don't know if the specialization part is really paying off as greatly as maybe these coaches are telling these kids or telling the parents. Because I can't tell you how proud I was to play football and then turn around and play basketball and turn around and play baseball and, like you said, play for, you know, with B&G in the summer times and all the youth teams that we played on, doing that kind of stuff, because you were just part of Jasper. You were part of the community. And I'm not saying kids who play just basketball. I'm not trying to be negative towards that. But the experiences you get, I just feel like it would be better for me as a 17-year-old kid to play in front of 2,000 people tonight in a basketball game instead of going to a baseball cage and hitting 50 balls off a tee.
Well, I agree with you, Mike. And even when I was coaching and a player would come to me and say, I'm thinking about not playing this and just working on basketball, I would say that's a great goal, and that would be wonderful if you really would be able to spend the time. Most kids, if they give something up, they really don't put in the amount of time that you really need. They're better off playing that other sport, being mentally tough, working those muscles, competing, playing with other players.
You learn to compete against.
That's right.
You're competing against, you know, this great team out of Evansville, or this great team out of Terre Haute, or Southridge, or DuBois, or Forest Park. You're competing against kids who really want to beat you. So they're fighting you for everything. And that just, to me, carries over to that next sport you're going to play. Because you're used to, like, playing these kids, and you're like, you know what, we beat these guys in basketball. I don't want them beating us in baseball. We got to beat them in baseball, too. And I think that it just carries over and just makes the high school experience so much better.
Well, Mike, you know, looking back at our playing days, I keep thinking about left field and being one of the most boring positions to play when Mike Ballinger was pitching, unless there was a left-handed batter, because there was never any balls ever hit out there. So had a lot of time to daydream and, you know, et cetera.
But you were such a good hitter, so maybe you were thinking about hitting all the time when you were out in the outfield. So maybe it ended up paying off for you.
I don't know. I think I always had that Coach Howard. What was it? The belt for the bunt? God forbid.
You know what?
They called you Mendoza as a nickname, Joe.
Joe, think about this. Think about how many times, depending on who was leading off, either you or Bo. Think about how many times you got or Bo got on first, and then Coach Howard would give us the bunt sign, and the next guy would bunt, and we would be first and third with nobody out in the first inning.
Yeah, that's
because
true.
Because we bunted up the third baseline. Third baseman would charge. Nobody would cover third. And whoever was going from first to second would just keep on going to third. We'd be first and third, nobody out, almost every first inning of the game.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
It was amazing how many times we did that.
But see, what you guys are talking about right now is what we hope our young athletes are thinking about as they play and then go through. And that's not just playing the game, but what it takes to be successful in the game and understanding what your coaches are trying to do and understanding what your teammates are trying to do. And I think that's what's interesting about the conversation we're having with you, Mike, is because you still look at the game not just in competing for the score, but how the game is played and what you're trying to accomplish in the game.
Well, you know, I had great coaches. I had a great father. You know, it's funny that you talk about doing different things. I mean, we're all old enough now that we remember when, you know, cable TV was 6 or 7 channels. You know, and there wasn't video games, there wasn't iPhones, there wasn't iPads. So if you were inside, there really wasn't anything to do. So you better get outside and shoot and throw the ball up in the air and try to catch it and go play wiffle ball. You know, now my sons want me, you know, they want to call and see if some kid is home so they can go play. Well, we used to go outside and knock on doors.
Yeah.
And say,
let's
get 9 guys or let's get 8 guys and play wiffle ball 4-on-4. And now, you know, they're like texting each other, seeing what they're doing. It's just a totally different time. And I think kids are taking advantage of some of those things and becoming good athletes and so forth. But it was just such a different time in how you organized and became friends with people. It's totally different.
Well, I know this, that there's a lot more parental involvement in putting your kids into organized things instead of just
absolutely.
Letting them go out and play and hit balls off the – throw tennis balls off the side of a building and hit rocks into the next parking lot and just do those.
Try to go catch it. Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's totally a different time. It really is.
Hey, Mike,
I want to brag on you a little bit. This is called our Glory Days segment, and you were a great athlete. I'm going to start with basketball just so our listeners can understand a little bit. You're an Indiana All-Star, 30 or more points 6 times – as a player in high school, 47 points in a game, which is the second most, versus Southridge, one of our great rivals at the time. Maybe the only player to lead the Cats in scoring three straight years, averaged 21 points as a junior, 25 points as a senior, one of maybe three or four guys to ever average over 20 points in two consecutive years, 20 or more points 40 times in 73 games, 1,431 career points, 86% career free throw percentage. I mean, I can go on and on and on in basketball, but let's start there. You lived the dream of a Hoosier high school boy. A great basketball in front of 4,000, 5,000 people, games against the best teams in the Southern Indiana, the Terre Hautes, the New Albanys, the Evansville schools. Just a great opportunity to excel on the basketball court.
You know, you think about, and I appreciate you saying those things. You think about, like, and you guys can catch me up. Are the kids playing at the high school now? What happened to the gym? I know the gym collapsed or something. Where are they playing their games now?
They're playing at the old high school gym that a number of people redid. Beautiful floor.
Sure it is. Yeah.
Unfortunately, the crowds aren't what they should be, but it's a great place to play basketball, and they'll be in a new facility next year.
Well, I mean, I appreciate it, but I can remember, I think I'm saying this right, our freshman year we went half to the old school, and then the second semester we went to the new. Is that right, if I remember that right?
Yeah.
That's correct, when we were freshmen.
Yeah, so, I mean, I remember some of the games Mark Block had my freshman year at the new gym because we just opened that up. And, you know, again, I say this, and I played all the time. You know, I talk about playing three sports, but every chance I got when I was a little kid, I shot the ball. And you know, Barkley always says this on TV, and it's true, and it was true with me. You know, you can score a lot of points if you shoot a lot. So, you know, I did my fair share of shooting a lot during games. But, you know, practice is practice, and it's the experience of just playing in front of that many people, knowing that it was that important to the people in the community for us to beat Southridge and to beat DuBois and to beat Forest Park and to beat New Albany and Tell City and Princeton and, you know, all those teams that we played every year. It was you knew growing up, and again, Kenny, I say this because watching, you know, you and I sitting there when we were in fifth grade, sixth grade, watching your brother and Slick and Kevin and some of those other guys play, and Terry Tucker and all those guys, it was, you could just tell even then as a fifth grader, if you were lucky enough to be on the high school team at Jasper, hey, man, this is important. You know, this is important to go over to Huntingburg and win the sectional. It's important. You know, I can remember all those right around Christmas time. We always played Boonville on Friday and played Southridge on Saturday.
Yes.
And you were like, you know what? This is important to win both of these games because guess what? We're going to have 4,000 people there. They're going to be cheering in the student section. I mean, you think about our juniors. I don't remember if it was all 3 years, but especially our senior, all the guys who didn't play basketball, that played football or played whatever, they dress up like the Army and show up for the games.
Yeah, they got involved, Mike. They were part of the team with their own identity, and yet we were all one.
Those 70 students, you know, all the guys that we knew that we were friends with would dress up, and they'd go to Evansville games, or they would come to Terre Haute, or they would drive to wherever. And just that support alone was – but you knew that as a kid. You knew that as a sixth grader sitting at the old gym watching these guys play. You knew that it was important to – be as good a player as you could be, and to help the school win basketball games because it was important. I mean, it was important to the community. It was important to the school. It was important to the students. And that was so great. That was the greatest thing about growing up in Jasper, how important the school and the sport programs and the academics, how important it was to the community. It was everything. I mean, I say this, and it's the truth. It was everything to me to be a part of the football team, the basketball team, the baseball team, because it was so important in the community, and that was what was so great about the experience.
When your classmates, the Army group that followed the basketball team, when they put their money in and pay to have a pre-sectional dinner for your team,
right,
you know you've got something unique and something exciting.
Do you remember when they would walk down the steps at the sectional, or they would walk down the steps maybe at Evansville Rice or Evansville Bossy or Terre Haute or wherever we played, you were just like, you would almost like warm-ups senior year, you were like, okay, when are they coming? When are they coming? And then they would show up and you could hear this noise in the crowd because the first five or six guys had been spotted and everybody knew, okay, another 50 guys are going to follow these guys and they're all going to be dressed the same and they're all going to be yelling and screaming and raising hell against the referees and the opposing team, and you knew that they supported you and had your back, and that was everything. I mean, that's what Jasper, the community, was about, and that was the great thing about it.
And to those listening who will listen that aren't on a team, you're listening to two guys who were on that team, and we were just as excited for those guys to come in and support us as we were getting ready for that game.
Oh, yeah.
It meant that much to be a community together.
It was as important as playing the game. It was as important as playing the game as those guys showing up and doing everything they could to help us win. It was everything. And, you know, Coach May was great in how he, you know, treated them and talked to them during the – like if Coach May or someone else saw him in the hallway maybe on a Monday after a big win on Saturday, I remember him saying things to the kids about, hey, we appreciate your support. Thanks for being there. Or, you know, if you had a class with Coach May, he and some of the kids were part of it, he'd say that thing. I mean, it was, and your dad could tell the same thing. You can remember how great the crowds were in the 70s at the old gym, all the students there. It was the best thing about being an athlete at Jasper High School was support you got from the parents, from the people in the community, and of course, especially the students.
You know, I always have to brag on the class of 81. I always thought there was extreme school spirit there because what other class would have half the crowd at the tennis semi-state one year almost
right.
threatened to be thrown
yeah.
out because we were cheering and we didn't know
exactly.
we weren't allowed
I mean,
to
it,
cheer.
It was just, it was, and, you know, I do go to, you know, some of the high school games of the school where probably my kids are going to go to high school. And, you know, the students are involved and they dress up a little bit and that kind of thing. But it's not... You know, again, maybe it is because there's more things to do and maybe kids are doing other things and so on and so forth. But it was a great – it was everything. It truly was – it brings back wonderful memories when you think about it.
Now, Mike, I have a question from a listener, and then also I've got someone who's called in that would like to talk to you.
Of course.
First, the question, it's from Kevin in Jasper. You played in a lot of great games in your career. What are a few that stick out in your mind most?
Well, obviously winning the sectional was wonderful. Kenny mentioned this already. The Southridge game we won at home our senior year was wonderful because the crowd was huge. And I don't know what it is now, but there's no question the Southridge was our biggest rival then. And, of course, you know, Kenny can remember this, the Friday night game against Dubois that we came back. Kenny hit a big shot. Mike Berger, I think, maybe made a steal and hit a big shot. We beat Dubois and then the next night beating Southridge for the second time that season. You know, those three games just because, again, how much I knew and Kenny knew and all the other guys and his brother Don and you know, some of the other guys on the team, Mike Berger, Dean Murder, those guys, you just knew Bobby Pope. You just knew how important it was the community to, you know, to beat Dubois, to beat Southridge. And that was, you know, that weekend beating Dubois on Friday and beating Southridge on Saturday in the sectionals is probably as good as it gets.
Okay, and I got a caller, a regular caller to the show, one Slick Weber would like to talk to Mike. Slick, you're
hey,
on.
Slick,
with
Slick, how you doing, man?
Pretty good, Mike. Really missed you last Saturday or a couple of Saturday nights ago.
I hate that I missed it. And you know what? It was so funny. The first time you sent that, you sent the email, I never knew what your damn name was. I always thought it was Slick. And I got this email, and I said, who is this David Weber guy? Who is this? But you know what? I hope you've been listening, and I truly
yeah.
mean this. I don't know if I've ever told you this, and occasionally I see Kevin Manley. It's been a long time. And
right.
When you guys were playing your junior, senior year, remind me of some of the guys who would have played a lot those 2 years, that Kenny and I and, you know, all guys who would have been, you know, 7th, 6th, 8th grade at that time. Who were some of the other guys that played with you?
Mike, that's so kind of you to say so nice words about Kevin and I. Oh, Tommy Nicholson and Al Sang, Mike Leger, Tommy
okay.
Berger, Mike Teich, all those guys.
Oh,
they were
Tommy
just
Berger,
terrific.
I can't believe. Well, I remember, was Mike a little bit older than you or younger?
Mike Leger's?
Mike Teich.
Mike Teich was 2 years younger. He was the same age as Mike Leger's.
Okay,
so he was 2 years younger than I was. He graduated in 1974. So
I mean,
you
think
probably
about
saw
all
a lot
great,
of them.
Yeah, you think about all the great Leaguers guys that played at Jasper. You know,
oh,
see,
yeah.
that was a time, Slick, I remember, and a kid. I mean, I even remember, and Kenny would remember this too, there was a 2 or 3 year period where you guys played, somebody did, played in the semi-state at Evansville, because I remember as a little kid going to Roberts Stadium.
Right. Well, my senior year, we made it to the semi-state, and then the following year, when Leaguers was a junior and Tommy Berger and Mike Tyson and those guys, they went down there. They went with back-to-back years. Tommy Berger hit a fadeaway against Southridge to win the sectional. It was about 9 or 10 seconds to go. They were down by a point. But anyway, the reason I called in, Mike, and I appreciate all you said about, you know, the guys you looked up to, and you included my name. That's awful nice of you. But I know you're going to touch on this, Kenny, Coach K. Saturday night, Southridge sectional, final game, the greatest fourth quarter performance I've ever seen in my life, and nobody's ever touched it. I was sitting on the opposite side of the student section, and I'm getting chills now. And when that buzzer went off and all those students came flowing down like one big wave to hit the floor, wow, was that special.
You know what, Slick, you guys, all the guys who played before, I appreciate you saying that, but all the guys who played before me and Kenny had a lot to do with how that happened, because when you're a little kid and you go over to Huntingburg, and I mean, I remember my dad standing in line to get tickets, and maybe we weren't even going to get tickets because the demand was so high for sectional tickets. You know, I can remember going over to Huntingburg as a little kid with my dad, and we didn't have tickets because he didn't get, you know, whatever they called it, however they did the lottery or whatever it was. And we would buy tickets from guys, maybe, you know, like somebody lost, and so we'd buy tickets. So when you're a kid and you see that, and you see, I don't even know, what's Huntingburg seats? 6,000, whatever it seats. You know, I have six, whatever. And you can see, it's full, and there's people everywhere, and they're screaming and yelling, and all the players are down on the floor, and the lights are bright. And you're 9, 10, 11 years old, and you see that, you think, well, man, I got to be involved in this. I got to do whatever I can to be Kevin Manley, to be Slick Weber. And so it was so important, and especially my sophomore and junior year by not winning, it was so important to win senior year. So you just, you know, and I know Kenny felt that way because of the way he played the night before against Dubois, and then again that Saturday night, how well he played against Southridge. It was so important for us to win that night. It really was.
I tell you what, that Friday night game, you know, and I know you know this, you know, you fouled out, and those other guys stepped up huge. Kenny and
it was everything.
Dean Murder,
yeah.
And Mike Berger made that big steal you're talking about.
You talking about Mike Stewart, Dan Ackerman, Bobby Pope, Berger made
all
a great
guys.
Kenny hit a great deep shot from, I don't know if it was from the wing or the corner. I mean, you can't, and that's the other great thing about basketball. You know, we're talking about other sports, but all five guys, you know, whatever part it takes, if it's a key rebound, a steal, a block shot, you know, it takes everything for it to happen. It's wonderful.
Coach K, I will get off so you can talk to him because I didn't want to take up your time. But
We always love talking to you, Slick. I just wanted to add on that. It was an incredible performance by Mike, especially coming off that tough game against Dubois where he was in foul trouble and fouled out. And, you know, you're sitting there. I'm sure, Harry, you were sitting there thinking, we got to find a way to win this game. This is not how we want to end. But I can tell you on the floor, when we would huddle up, we would say to each other, we're not going to let him go out this way. We're going to find a way to get this win, and we're going to win this sectional tomorrow night. And, you know, I had a regional championship as a coach and some sectionals and all-star players. But one of the most important pictures that sits on my wall in my basement is the seniors from that 1981 team after we won that sectional, holding that sectional trophy and taking that picture. It still resonates with me because you gave everything you had and everybody gave everything they could bring to the game, some less than others. I obviously wasn't near as talented as Mike or a number of those other guys, but you gave everything you had for the common goal for the community, and that was to win that sectional championship.
Absolutely, and I want to echo what Kenny said earlier, Mike. When I was making these phone calls to people for the 100-year anniversary thing, so many people asked, did you get a hold of Ballinger? Did you get a hold of Ballinger? Is he coming? So people still, you know, remembers how great you were, and, man, I tell you what, I'll never forget how great you were, man. You were a terrific ball player. And,
I appreciate that very much. I just hope you understand the group of guys that you played with in the 70s, and I've said this before, but how important you guys were to get me to be that player in high school, because that's all I did. I mean, the most important – I don't think I ever missed a game.
No, nobody missed the game. Nobody missed the game, Mike.
Yeah, no, of course. I mean, we would drive. I can remember driving to Terre Haute, watching you guys play. I can remember driving to Boonville. I can remember driving everywhere. You know, I can remember if we couldn't go, we sat and listened to Wits on the radio and listened to it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was huge. It was
now, you know, you guys were talking about it earlier, how different it is now. People specializing, and boy, we could talk all night on that stuff.
Oh,
and,
I know.
So next time you come to Jasper, call me up. I'll call Kenny up. We'll talk all night about basketball.
Absolutely. Hey, appreciate it very much.
Thanks for calling in, Slick.
Coach K, great show, buddy. I'll see you. Bye bye.
Hey, Mike. A couple more things before we let you go. I want to ask a question going into your senior year. And then I want to talk a little bit about in college, and then we'll let you go. And you've been so generous with your time, and I certainly appreciate it. Your senior year, you decided to forego your football and concentrate on basketball and baseball with the idea that you were probably going to go on and play basketball at the University of Kentucky or some university who had shown a lot of interest. Take us through, if you can... You don't have to go deep into it, but your decision, when you made that. And then I just want to comment on still how many college football teams were still interested in you when you didn't even play your senior year. But go through for our listeners just kind of your decision, how you looked at it back then.
And Joe can tell you this, because it was very difficult for me to do it just because of all the teammates and great friends I had that played football. And, you know, we played baseball with guys all through Pony League in high school, and then you play Pee Wee football, and you play high school and freshman and JV and varsity. And then, you know, it was a thing where I had, maybe 30, 40, 50 offers for basketball, and IU and Purdue and Louisville were the only three schools that offered me for football. And it just got to the point where, like, you know, I don't even really know if I have a great reason or why I did it. It was just the thought that when I looked at it, I can even remember writing down on a piece of paper, okay, here's the offers for basketball, here's the offers for football. I want to play baseball too if they'll let me. And, you know, I just thought to myself, you know, my dad was a huge Kentucky fan. He did so much for me. I always thought Kentucky, but if someone else, you know, I also thought of Louisville. I also thought of Purdue. I also thought of, you know, some other schools, Michigan. But it just seemed like it made sense for that one year, you know, if I really wanted to do this, which I had in my heart that I thought basketball I loved more than anything, if I really wanted to do it, just concentrate that last year. Now, if I had to do it over, there's no way I would do it because, you know, if you're good enough in any sport, somebody will find you. You know, some school will find you and make you an offer. You just have to play, you know. But if you don't play, they can't find you. And, you know, I know it's a little different now, especially in basketball, because most kids are seen more in the summertime in AAU tournaments than they are seen during their basketball season with their high schools. But it was different then 30 years ago. And it was difficult because I love football. Coach Brewer, I mean, his record speaks for himself for what he did for not only Jasper but the state of Indiana, as far as teaching football and winning games. But, you know, Coach May was I just really felt senior year, it was an important year for me. We hadn't won the sectional in 2 years. Coach May, I just knew, was going to be a great coach for me and for the rest of us. And I just one time wanted to concentrate and take that time and become as good a basketball player as I could be, and that's kind of why I did what I did.
Well, I can tell our listeners that you did take the time and work on it, because I was in that gym many times with you when you were working out.
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
It wasn't wasted
time.
Time.
Fall, man. You, Donnie, and me, Donnie and Dean Murder. I mean, how many summers did we go over there that summer when I wasn't, you know, that whole month of August until school started and half of July? We'd run into that new gym, you know, the four of us, and just play and play and play. And that's, I think, has much to do with some of the success we had our senior year as anything.
Now you still had some interest from a school or two, even though you didn't play football your senior year. Maybe I'm inaccurate on this, but didn't you still have some interest from some schools that still wanted you to come play football?
Well, the funniest thing about that, Kirk Herbstreit, who works for ESPN, used to live across the street from me. And when he lived in Columbus, he moved to Nashville a couple of years ago. And, of course, a lot of kids nowadays don't know Lee Corso as being the coach for Louisville and IU. They just know him as the funny guy on TV that puts the costumes on at the end of the show. But when he was at IU, even after I transferred from UK and came home, he called me up and said, Mike, if you still want a full ride to play football at IU, just come on. You know, just come. I know you haven't played in a couple of years, but you can redshirt for a year. We'll lift some weights. We'll throw the ball, and we'll get you ready. And also, before I went off to Kentucky to play basketball my freshman year, I can't remember the guy's name at Purdue, but somebody at Purdue called and said, look, you know, I know you're headed there and you've already signed a scholarship, but if you change your mind, you've got to call us because we'd love to have you, you know, come back down and you know, we'll redshirt you and so on and so forth. So I had some interest even not playing my senior year. It was just football was – and, of course, I don't know how it is now. I really don't because I haven't seen – anybody play in Jasper in a long time because it's just hard to get there. But everything was so important. The Friday night football games were important, the basketball, the baseball. And so it was just hard to not play. I mean, it was so odd my senior year to not play a sport in the fall because I'd been doing it since, you know, seventh grade at what the heck is our middle school name? At 10th Street. Yeah.
10th Street.
Yeah, 10th Street. So it was just so hard to not have to have a fall where I wasn't playing something. But it was, you know, it was a wonderful time, and I just wish every kid that ever decides to do anything, soccer, band, cheerleading, whatever it is, just do it. You know, participate in your school. Get involved and just, you know, you make friends and you do things. And, of course, you know, here we are talking, you know, for however long we talked about this. If I hadn't played this, we wouldn't be able to, you know, tell lies and tell everybody how great we were.
Yeah. Hey, you know, another thing that a lot of people probably don't remember but was one of the interesting aspects of your career, and it just seemed to follow you that way. You're an Indiana All-Star in basketball. You're playing in the state finals in baseball, and it's pretty much going on all at the same time. Take us through that weekend. You guys had this great semi-state in baseball. We talked with Mike Berger about that a few weeks, about four shows ago. You guys go on. You're playing in the state finals. What a wonderful time that was for baseball and Coach Howard. And you're trying to prepare for the Indiana All-Star Basketball Series with Kentucky.
Well, the sad part about it is I probably pitched as poorly as I could pitch in the state finals that year when we got beat. I think Joe would remember. I think it might have been 6-5 to one of the Fort Wayne teams, I think.
Fort Wayne, no.
And if I'd have pitched better at all, I think we would have been in the finals. And I much would have rather been in the finals that night than play in the All-Star game. But what happened, it just so happened, the timing was, when you're on the Indiana All-Star team, you play one game, I guess it was at Market Square Arena, and then the next weekend you played at Freedom Hall in Louisville. And it just so happened that the weekend that we were in Indianapolis for the Final Four baseball was also the Saturday night game of Indiana versus Kentucky at Market Square. And so I had every intention of not playing because obviously I wanted us to be playing in the Saturday night game to win the state in baseball. But when we lost in the morning or early afternoon, whenever that was, I don't remember how it was, but somebody got in touch with my dad and said, look, we want Mike to play. You know, we've got his uniform. Just come on over. So my dad and I just drove from the baseball. I changed clothes in the car, and we just drove over. And I just showed up like an hour before the game. And, you know, I hadn't seen any of those guys because that week that we were practicing for the state baseball, they were practicing in Indianapolis for the game. So they didn't really think I was coming. So I showed up, and, you know, the guy, Vincent Gunnar Wyman, was the head coach, and he was nice enough to play me quite a bit that game, even though I hadn't practiced all week. So obviously it was a fun time, but at the same time, I much would have rather waited the next week and played in Louisville and played in the state finals because we had such a great team and so many of those guys on the team that year, baseball, my senior year, we all played so many years of Pony League together, played in the national finals in Davenport, Iowa when we were eighth graders. And, you know, so many of those guys, Bo, Danny Schutt, I mean, there's so many of those guys. When you talk about Mike Berger, how great a player he was, and Joe, and what we had, Schutze played right field, John Crimp, Scott Sager,
skip. Phil Sheeter caught. Chinesky played third. I mean, we just had such a great team, and so many of those guys we've known for all the years playing Pony League. It was so great that weekend, but also so disappointing. If I'd have pitched better on that Saturday afternoon, I know we would have had a heck of a chance to win Saturday night, because John would have thrown for us, your brother, and would have done a great job. So we would have been, you know, even in better shape for the night game.
Well, you carried us enough with your pitching. We knew maybe we should have hit a little bit better.
Well, you know what? If somebody would have said before the game started, Mike, we're going to score 5 runs, I'd be like, look, go ahead and buy a ticket for Saturday night games because we're going to win.
That's the confidence you have to have. That's why you're playing in the finals to begin with, because you've got that kind of confidence as a team and as a player.
It was just disappointing that we scored 5 runs and I couldn't hold it. It was just sad, just really sad.
But
I'm not bitter, of course.
you go on and you finish a great high school career in all 3 sports and all state, all-star in just about everything you can be in. And you go on and you get the coveted scholarship to the University of Kentucky, Joe B. Hall. Let's face it, back then, even today, as it is today, I mean, that was primo scholarship. That was a primo opportunity, Wildcat Lodge, everything that goes with being a Kentucky basketball player.
Well, you know, it was wonderful, and I the biggest thing I regret about my time there is I was so obsessed with getting there or getting somewhere, you know, getting to Louisville or Michigan or Kansas State or Arkansas, because I just wanted to play college basketball. And the mistake I made when I got there, I became satisfied, and I just, like, okay, I'm here. That's it. I've accomplished what I want to accomplish. And instead of, like, you know, continuing to work hard and try to get better, I was just happy to be along for the ride. And it was a mistake I made. It took me a couple of years to figure it out. And, you know, the tough thing about college, no matter what sport it is, it can be soccer, tennis, whatever it is, you're playing against your teammates now are also the best players on their team. You know, they were the best players in the county. They were the best players in the state. And so next thing you know, you've got 13 other teammates that were, you know, as good or better or a lot better than you. And then now it's the same way with the teams that you're playing, the same kind of competition. So if you don't continue to work and step up, and if you become satisfied, it becomes a struggle. And that's what it became until I figured it out. But, you know, I was lucky to play 2 sports at both UK and Western. I played basketball and baseball. I traveled. I saw Japan twice. I went to Mexico City and played for a couple different years. You know, and it was all because, and I believe this with all my heart, it was all because of, you know, the experience at Jasper of playing all those sports and the community support you had so much to do with what happened later on in my life.
Okay, last question, I promise. I keep saying it's going to be
one or two questions,
but last question, because this is the most asked and discussed when it comes to Mike Ballinger, and it has to do with baseball. You went on to play some baseball in college. The question that I get most often is, well, didn't he get drafted, or did he not, or did he have arm problems? Take us through the end of your baseball career, at least. What happened? Was there another opportunity to go be professional, or did the arm injury kind of clarify for our listeners and put that to rest today?
Probably the closest I got to pros when I was, in fact, I saw this guy on TV the other night because the ESPN did a special on Bo Jackson. They talked to a guy named Art Stewart, who at the time was head of scouting for Kansas City Royals. Before my senior year was over of baseball, Kansas City Royals came to me and said, look, we know you have a scholarship to Kentucky. What would it take for you to give up that scholarship and have us draft you as an 18-year-old kid and start playing professional baseball? And I, you know, without really having any idea, I didn't have anybody else to talk to. I just thought to myself, at that time, a scholarship is worth $10,000 a year. So I said, look, a 4-year scholarship is $40,000. I said, if you offer a $50,000 signing bonus, I'll take it, and I won't go to college, and I'll start playing minor league baseball. And they came back, and they came back maybe 2 days later and said $30,000. And I said, no, that's not enough. I'm going to school. So I ended up going to Kentucky, played, and now at the end of my career, I had some scouts talk to me, but the problem was I was already 22, and, you know, that's really old in baseball to start a career in the minor leagues, because they think it's going to take 4 or 5 years of minor league baseball, unless you're just, you know, some phenomenal player. They always say it's going to take 4 or 5 years to get through the system, which now makes me 27, 28 years old. And, you know, by then they think that's just, you know, they don't want to invest that type of money in an older guy when they can, you know, groom some guy at 18 and they call him up when he's 21 or 22. So that, I just ran into an age. And I mean, I threw, you know, in college, I got to the low 90s, 90, 91, but I just never really got it where, you know, it was impressive enough that somebody would give me a chance. So I technically was never, I never had arm problems in my life. I tell you what, Kenny, the only time I remember ever my arm hurting is my, and you'll appreciate it. My junior year, I pitched in a regional game on a Saturday. We lost, and I went and played softball on a Sunday with B&G at St. Anthony's, and I remember my arm hurting that day, and it was just because I had pitched the day before, and then that next day I started throwing softball around. But other than that, I'd never had an arm problem at all, never in my life. My last year I pitched, started the whole year for Western, had some good games, had some scouts talk to me, but nothing ever really happened. So it was just a situation where I just, you know, of all the things that I regret the most, I saw Michael play a little bit, Lewis. I could not believe how great of a player he was. I mean, I enjoyed watching you coach him and the way you guys played, and I never got a chance to see Scott play baseball or basketball. You know, my dad would always keep me up. I think I was living in Louisiana or Texas at the time, so I hardly ever got home. But I just remember Dad keeping up with, you know, he would tell me about it because he would go to the games. And the size of Scott and the shooting ability of Michael is just two things I wish I would have seen, because I just know both of them were just fabulous. And I think they would say some of the same things I said today about the Jasper community. I mean, it's everything that a kid would want if he wants to experience high school sports at its best is to be a part of the Jasper community. I truly believe that.
Well, it is, and they would say the same things. And for me, when people talk to me about my time coaching and playing with you, I just say that I was blessed to arguably play and coach the three greatest basketball players at Jasper High School. I got to play with you. I got to coach Scott Rowland and Michael Lewis. And see their development and be a part of it. And the thing that's interesting, they all had a strength of conviction the same way you did. They were all independent, individual in the way they looked at things. I think that's very important. They were easy. A lot of people don't. They were easy to work with. And I know you were easy to work with as a player with your coaches. And they were too. But they were fierce competitors. And the one thing that people may forget about you, you were no little guy. You were 6'3", almost 6'4", 190, 195 pounds. It was a pleasure playing with you. And it's just been a great pleasure having you on the show today, Mike. I think a lot of people have wanted to find out and talk about Mike Ballinger. And today I think we got that and more.
Well, guys, look, I appreciate it very much that you reached out to me. I'm very happy to do it today. Anytime that you, you know, you can't get a guest on, you need a last, you know, a stopgap last guy, just call me. I'll be happy to talk and tell lies like we've told today. But I just appreciate. I wish you guys all the luck in the world with the show. I know it's going well. I mean, I was disappointed to miss the ceremony at the 100 year thing. I was lucky through Slick. He sent some. A link where I was able to see a lot of the pictures and see a lot of the people that you know, have meant a lot to me playing. And I just appreciate so much being on the show. I hope people enjoyed it. And it was as good experience for me as it was for you guys. And I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for being with us, Mike. Great blessings and luck as you go forward with those little guys. I know I still have a sixth grader and he thinks he wants to be a basketball player. So we're going to have a lot of fun like you're going to have a lot of fun these next few years. Thanks for being on the show.
Appreciate it, guys. Talk to you soon.
You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Are you in the market for a new fence? Look no further than the Willis Fence Company. Willis Fence Company offers wood fences, chain link fences, aluminum and iron fences, and polyvinyl fences. Give fence professional Joe a call at 630-2449 for a free estimate today. The Willis Fence Company, a fence for every taste and budget.
We are going to do what we set out to do. We're going to win that tournament.
Yes!
I knew it. I knew you were a champion the minute I saw you bowl, Ish.
I'm not going to bowl. You are.
You are such a loser. You're a bona fide schmuck. Look at me.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show. Coach, I'll tell you what, that was a pretty awesome interview, wasn't it?
Well, it was an awesome interview, and as I knew it would be, and I think that there were a lot of people that are listening or will be listening that will want to know a little bit about Mike and how things ended up and where he was with baseball, and I think it answers some questions that, honestly, people have had for 30 years.
Oh, yeah. And I wish I'd have seen this before we let Mike go, but Andy Outlet had commented on Facebook that can't imagine growing up any better place than Jasper, watching Ballinger playing with Roland and seeing Michael turn into a phenomenal basketball player, all incredible Wildcats. And I think I'd agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. And I think there's a lot of great local communities around here that have great traditions and care about their community, you know, from Southridge to Forest Park to the Heritage Hills area. And Jasper, I think, set that standard and a long time ago and has for years.
Yes, they have. So, hey, but I'll tell you what. Let's talk some Spencer County hoops. We've got Steve Kolb on the line, WAXL play-by-play man. Steve, how you doing today?
Well, I'm great, Joe. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate the chance to come on and talk to us some basketball.
Hey, Steve, this is Coach K. We're pretty excited to let you give us a little update on both Heritage Hills and South Spencer and find out how these teams are doing in Spencer County. And, you know, we're dealing – we had Coach Sisley on a couple weeks ago, and you know, he's dealing with a young team and a program that he's trying to bring back up to a level that they enjoyed in the past. Talk to us a little bit about the growth of this young Heritage Hills Patriot team and the direction they're going with Coach Sisley.
You know, Coach, it's been fun for me personally to watch this group grow because, you know, they started the season, they only had one starter returning. There are no seniors on the basketball team. In your conversation with Mike Ballinger, you're talking about one of his teammates, Dean Murder. Well, Dean's son, Devin Murder, is the go-to guy, or at least was, to start the season for Heritage Hills as the lone returning varsity player. And to watch the rest of these guys, and you know, they didn't come into it deer in headlights because this is a group that's played basketball together for years and had success as a group together. So it's a very confident, very talented group. But to watch them grow and start to understand what it takes to have that kind of success at the high school varsity level has been neat, and especially here after Christmas, because over that Christmas break during the PSC holiday tournament time, they had some injuries and some health issues that kind of set them back a game or two. But since then, watching them grow and start to do things on the defensive end to add what they're were already capable of doing on the offensive end has been a lot of fun to watch. And the last couple of games, they've been really, really good.
You know, Steve, when I was talking with Coach Sisley, we were talking about the youth, and as a coach, I've been there with the young teams and trying to bring them along. You know, it's really important to make sure the little things get taken care of, the blockouts, the help, the getting the key rebound, getting in the passing lane. And you know, he felt really comfortable about this team being able to score. And sometimes you worry with young people that they think, well, we'll just outscore the other team. And on the scoreboard, you do outscore the other team, but it's not really because you're just shooting more and making more. You're doing all those little things. Is this team starting to find identity and an understanding of doing those little things?
Yeah, they really are, Coach. And it showed up the last couple of games. When you look at their last couple of scores, they held Tell City to 41. They held Forest Park. I'm sorry. It helps if I have the right screen now. They held held to Tecumseh to 38 and Pike Central to 48, Washington to 49. So, you know, they started the season you know, giving a 66, 65, 79, 73. And so they were just, you know, running up and down the floor, racing with teams and outscoring them. Here after Christmas, they started to put the clamps on defensively. The January 5th game at Washington, where they won 67-49, and that game really wasn't that close. Washington made a run there in the last 2 minutes after Heritage Hill subbed out their starters to make that look even closer. But they led by, I think, 25 up at the Hatchet House against Washington in that game. And they just, Washington couldn't get anything going offensively. They'd run set after set after set and restart that offense and couldn't get anything. And that seemed to me like that was the game where the light bulb kind of went on the defensive end for Heritage Hills. And they realized that, you know, how good they could be on the defensive end, and they could win a game like that. They could win the half-court game where they don't rely on getting, you know, a ton of transition points off turnovers, which they had relied heavily on earlier in the year. Now they're doing it with the half-court defense.
Yeah, and that's really what you want to see a team develop, because it's really what I call, for a lack of a better term, nut cutting time in that half court when you got to get a stop. You got to make sure that you take care of business, because when as you move through the dog days of late January and early February and you start gearing up for the tournament, you've got to be ready to hold your ground, and that's the difference of moving on in the tournament or going home. As this team continues to grow and build its identity, and it gets into this February period, and as a coach, man, February can be tough because the season is so long. And I would think this team, having gone through the holidays and played all those games, this is going to be an important time for this team to distinguish their mental toughness.
It really will, because they've got a lot of conference games coming up here throughout January and February, and some good non-conference games mixed in there as well. And I think one of the games that I'm looking forward to the most when you talk about developing mental and even physical toughness will be the game coming up on February 2nd when Jasper comes to Lincoln City to take on Heritage Hills. Last year, Heritage Hills went up to Cappy O'Neill, and quite frankly, the Wildcats punched them in the mouth, and they didn't respond very well to it. Mm-hmm. I think there'll be a little better response to it this year. I don't think there's any doubt that Jasper will try to do it again. They're obviously a big, physical, strong basketball team and likes to, you know, play kind of a down, dirty, physical style of basketball, and I think they'll try to impose their will on Heritage Hills. And I'm interested to see how the Patriots will respond to that in that game, because that'll be a huge test. The game against Vincennes Lincoln on February 9th will be another one, because you want to talk about needing to be mentally tough taking on Jeff Hines ball clubs. You know, any mistake you make is just magnified and turned into a basket in a blink of an eye. So those are some big games coming up for them that will really tell you a lot about where this team's at and where they're capable of going.
Well, let's shift over to the other part of Spencer County and talk a little bit about the South Spencer Rebels. Give us a little update on South Spencer and the direction that this team seems to be taking right now.
You know, they're having a very nice year, just like Heritage Hills is. And you look at the top of the PAC standings, and right now it's Southridge, Heritage Hills, and South Spencer sitting there undefeated at the top of the conference. Southridge and Heritage Hills at 4-0, South Spencer at 3-0. And South Spencer, I thought they'd have a good year this year. What has surprised me is Coach Davis has found depth in this program where I didn't think it existed before, and that's been a huge problem for them over the last couple of years, trying to find any kind of depth past the starting five. And all of a sudden, they've got nine guys averaging better than 3 points a ball game, only one averaging in double figures, so they don't have the same guy stepping up doing it every night. And they're off to their best start since the 99-2000 season. They've only had two winning seasons since then, so they're kind of like Heritage Hills, trying to get back to some of those glory days of the 90s and back to some winning basketball. And they took a couple of huge steps toward that this year. South Spencer had lost 10 in a row to Gibson Southern, but went into Titan Fieldhouse back in December and won 65-60 there. Then they had lost 19 in a row to Forest Park. I mean, two really long conference losing streaks, although a lot of those games against Forest Park were back when they weren't in the same conference, but a 19-game losing streak to Forest Park, and they go into Ferdinand to Woody Deakler Arena a couple of weekends ago and come out with a huge win there, 45-31. So they've kind of exercised some demons and done it with great balance. And they're a team that's got a – they've got a lot of scoring options as well on this team, a lot of guys that can shoot it well from the outside. And I think one of their keys, and I know you've seen this, Coach, over the years with teams, is finding the success when you and I would always put this, you don't come down and get the first decent shot, you work for the best shot, because this team was capable of hitting the first good shot, and they would have some success doing that and fall into that, and then all of a sudden those shots weren't going and you weren't working the offense and getting enough out of it. And when it clicked for this team back in early to mid-December that they can, when they worked that offense and shared the basketball the way they were capable, and they could break teams down defensively with their offense against the other team's defense with the weapons they have, it really started to click for them. And their defense has been pretty solid all year, but when they were able to figure that out on the offensive end and really work that offense, they become a lot of fun to watch. So basketball in Spencer County has become, suddenly after some down years, has become a lot of fun to watch here this season.
Well, it's got great tradition over there, both South Spencer and Heritage Hills, and having competed against Heritage Hills many times, I know what they're capable of. I do think it's just a great point when you mentioned about not just taking the first good shot, but taking the best shot. And I think whether it's grade school, high school, college, we see Michigan, who has a great outside shooting team, tend to fall into that trap of the best shot, but just taking the first good open shot. And, you know, that's that little trap. It's like when you come out and you're hitting that three and you tell your team, guys, we got to move this ball inside as well as outside, and they think they can just live on that three, and they end up dying on that three. So great point, Steve. Great update on Spencer County Hoops, both Heritage Hills and South Spencer. Thanks for being with us. Will you join us again?
Absolutely. You can give us a call anytime.
We love having you. We're going to get ready for our next segment. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like
Short
Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit IdeaFusionMedia.com. That's IdeaFusionMedia.com.
Can't talk now, you're mute. We got that old little blind deaf mute girl. Old Yeller. What's her name? Old
Helen Yeller.
No, old Helen Yeller.
Don't you guys mean Helen Keller?
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. Coach, I'll tell you what, you know, we couldn't do it without our sponsors and, you know, Josh Houchin at Idea Fusion Media. If you're in looking to get a professional website done for your business or organization, you know, give him a call.
Yeah, Josh is great. Unfortunately, he's a big Michigan fan.
Yeah,
just
that's
teasing. He had to be pretty happy with their win up at the barn against Minnesota. But, yeah, you know, we've got some great sponsors, and we certainly think they're not just good sponsors. They're pretty good at what they do. So we encourage our listeners to reach out to them whenever possible and get the help that they need. I know they've done a great job for us. Joe, as we start this short open session before we go into our last segment, which we kind of call internally the rant, with Kurt Guxell and some of our other contributors call in and we talk a little bit. Just wanted to talk about some of the things that have gone on during the week real quickly. We're not going to beat a dead horse, but we know Lance Armstrong finally came clean. And it was disappointing because of the way some people looked at it. Some people said, well, you know, he was just winning bike races. He was just cheating in bike races. And that's really not the case. While he was racing in these Tour de France's and all these things, and he was being accused of doping and using performance-enhancing drugs. He continually came out and attacked anyone who said that he was doing it. He tried to ruin them. It was more than just cheating to win a bike race, unfortunately. If that's all it would have been, well, then we can move on. But it was more than that. It's almost like these things took over his character and his attitude and how he treated people, and he really went after people to destroy him.
Yep, he did. And, you know, it's unfortunate that he did that, and now he's having to put his tail between his legs. And, you know, I don't know. I know, some people have the Livestrong organization. And the Livestrong organization has done a lot of great things, but that still doesn't excuse him for, his behavior of cheating and then also attacking the people. I think the cheating was bad enough, but the attacking the people afterwards was probably,
Joe, some of the great, when we call them great at their profession, sports writers and columnists that defended him. I mean, there was a bunch of them that defended him through this period, saying, "No, he hasn't done anything wrong. He's being mistreated." I mean, I've listened to him the last couple of days with the egg on their face and saying, we're embarrassed. We believed him. We trusted him. And it hurt our credibility. And, where there's smoke, there's usually fire, unfortunately. We've gone through a period where people, in order for fame and fortune, have done what people have done for centuries, just maybe on a bigger scale, and that is they're willing to cheat and do things illegally and hurt other people to get where they need to go. And so we go from that to the Manti Te'o story, and I know, Joe, you are full of the jokes and everything else with Manti Te'o. It really is my perspective to our listeners. It's sad. It's sad because I think, I hate to say this, but I think Manti Te'o had more to do with this than what we were being led to believe at this point. It's sad because I believe the AD at Notre Dame is going to
look like a fool.
Have egg on his face before it's all said and done, because he did come out and support him at a level that was it was a high level of support. And I really am just sad and disappointed in this whole thing. Young people make mistakes and make decisions that are poor, just as adults do. You just wouldn't think a young man from the University of Notre Dame would be involved in something like this. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I have 100 listeners get back at me and say you were wrong about Manti Te'o. See, he didn't know, but I believe he knows more than.
Well, people, I don't know anything about this show. People over the last couple of days have said to me, "Oh, have you ever seen the show Catfish on MTV?" I don't usually watch MTV, but I might have to look at it, because they said that the lengths that these people will go to for these practical jokes. But I keep thinking, can something like that go on for years? And why? And I don't know. I've thought about this over the last couple of days, and it may have helped him a little bit with getting a few more Heisman votes and all that. And I think it's more embarrassing than a scandal for him.
It's embarrassing, and I also believe, and this is going to, people are going to get mad. They need to remember, I supported Notre Dame all year and a half for years. I do believe Notre Dame held this out of the public, not so Manti Te'o could go talk to his parents. I believe that they held this out of the public when they knew about it in late November because of the championship bowl game coming up. I believe they didn't want the bad publicity going into that bowl game and didn't want the pressure and stress on Manti. And maybe that affected how he played in that game, because he obviously wasn't the player that he had been up to that point. Alabama had a lot to do with that. I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit more in the rant with Kurt in a few minutes. Another thing I wanted to bring up on our Facebook, and I want to remind our listeners, we have both a Facebook site, Coach K and Joe Show on Facebook. We also have a Twitter account, Coach K and Joe at Twitter. But I had put on after the IU game against Wisconsin the other night. That was a great win for Wisconsin at IU. And my comment was, when IU was winning by 40 points and pressing with 3 minutes left against weak non-conference teams. The rationale was they have to keep preparing for the Big Ten. That's what we heard, and I think Kurt Gucksell is one of the guys that said it, so we'll talk to him about that. Well, why is IU not pressing now? And they didn't. I don't know where people thought they were. I didn't see what I call a full-out press against Wisconsin. Why did the Hoosiers not dictate the pace of the game now? Maybe they should have been working on ball movement, clock management in those games. Just a thought that I offered. And I love the Hoosiers, you know that. But I haven't understood why we were pressing in the non-conference games with 40-point leads, 35-point leads, with 2 minutes left. And here we are in conference against a team that wants to control the tempo in Wisconsin. Bo Ryan is excellent at it. We needed to do something to speed that game up. And it isn't just shooting quick shots. We needed to speed them up. Yeah, they may score a few times on that press. We may get a few fouls, but that's the beauty of the press. You lull a team into thinking that they're going to continue to get what they got in the first two or three times down the floor. And that's when the ball gets thrown away, the shots become quicker, the shots get missed, turnovers happen. It changes the pace of the game, folks. A press isn't about, I'm going to press the first two times and get a steal. A press is about changing the pace of the game over time in order to get the desired result that you want. We had a number of people commented on it. Steve, and Joe, if I say the name incorrectly, correct me. Steve Simonson.
Simonson,
they tried
yes.
to last night, which I don't remember when they did that, which was a great concept, but it only produced one turnover, and was when Wisconsin broke the press, they were hitting open shots. I don't think it was a consistent press that I saw. So IU backed out. Bottom line is Will needs to be playing more. I'm assuming Will Sheehy. He definitely shoots every time he gets in the game, and Jordy should not be on the floor. I don't know if I agree with him, but he has the right to make his comment. We enjoy the fact that he did. Jim Skillman says, let's face it, Wisconsin was good last night and IU was not. I think we will be okay. I agree with you, Jim, but that's just too easy of an answer. It's a home game. Big Ten conference game, we got to be better at home. Ron Sheeter said, fell into one-on-one, only pounding the dribble, no ball movement. Ron, I agree with you, we do that too much. Not enough free up shooters. I thought we looked like the team from 3 to 4 years ago when Jordy was a freshman, and boy, did we look slow. That was interesting. And Joe Milligan jumps on and says, I wasn't able to watch the second half. Zeller scores 18 in the first half. 2 in the second half. Did they forget about him? Brian Kirkhoff joined in. Brian, love your comments. If a team is used to taking quick shots, why would they pass them up when tempo was so important? I saw some open looks that they hesitated on. I don't disagree with the open looks as long as they're the best shot possible and not just a good shot. Joe, those were just some of the comments we got on Facebook, and people are welcome to go there and look at them. As you had some comments from your wannabe Thug Nation post.
Yeah, I'm no fan of Michigan State. People know that. I feel like Mr. Izzo, I won't even call him coach anymore. Mr. Izzo has had to try to keep up in the arms race of what that is called Division I basketball. Think he uses handlers. Think he's got a bunch of thugs, and Brandon Dawson being one of them. Him and who was the other player that. They were roommates and they got into a fight. I mean, you know, I was just like laughing, but we had some people comment about, you know, that agreed that they didn't, they were losing respect for him as well. Chris Eckstein, you know, said that he used to respect Izzo as a coach, but this is a bunch of crap. Oops, I shouldn't have said that. They will be in at the 18-minute mark. You know, the thing about Chris, you know, Chris is a big IU. Notre Dame fan, and you know we don't agree on a whole lot. And in 2013, we've already agreed on two things, and so you know I don't know how I feel about that. And then Skilly said it is still a class act, and it'll all cycle through. And then of course I ended it with Izzo it will cycle through with food poisoning like Taco Bell from Taco Bell.
Well, we certainly appreciate people's input, and we ask our listeners to continue to send in their comments and thoughts, post it on Facebook or Twitter, And by all means, feel free to call into the show whenever you are listening live. It's your sports show, and we want to talk about the things that you want to talk about. And when you call in, we get to do that. John Botsbodorf said last week that he really appreciated our Indy contributor Don Schulteis's perspective on Indy hoops. That was a great Marion County tournament up there, and I know the city tournament's starting to go on. So, folks, as we get ready to end our open session, we'll move into our rant session with Kurt Guxell from WWDC Sports Director, and we'll talk about some of the things we just talked about and a few other things going on. But we certainly there's just a lot going on in the sports world, and you know, we say it's just sports, but unfortunately, there's a lot of social issues that get intertwined with sports, whether it's pro or college level, and unfortunately sometimes on the high school level. We've had shootings outside of high school sporting events around the country in recent weeks. So disappointing. High school sports should be an avenue, should be a place where people can go. They can yell and scream and vent. The kids play, the fans scream and yell and support their teams or whatever, and it's a safe environment, and people can go home, get in their cars, walk home, ride their bike, whatever it may be. Unfortunately, the social issues that come up with gun control and people with access to guns that shouldn't have them, and I'm not getting into the NRA or anything like that, but shouldn't have them, affect amateur high school sporting events. It shouldn't happen. Cheating goes on in college. Cheating goes on in pro sports. Big money's involved. Lying. And not only does the lying go on while they're cheating, they actually go after people who comment that they think that they're cheating and try to ruin them. So they're compounding these. And so I say our show is not really about the social ills and the social issues, but you can't separate them from sports at different times. So we're going to end this open session, and then we'll come back and we'll get into our rant with Kurt Guxell and our Indy contributor Don Schulteis and Joe Milligan. Join us back here. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean, modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
I gotta work on my game.
No. Don't think of it as work. The whole point is just to enjoy yourself.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show for the rant, but I'd like to start it with a joke. Guys, nerds, not really a joke, I guess it's, I don't know. Nerds all over the world are happy today because they know that athletes also have made-up girlfriends. Hello?
Yes.
Are we back or not?
I think we're there. We get some feedback going on in the background, but Joe, if you made that up,
I didn't.
It was pretty pathetic.
I didn't. You just have to get on goldblack.com and get on the message board, and there's thousands of them. So we got everyone there. We got Donnie. We got Kurt. You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I'm getting a little feedback. I didn't know if somebody's back there running laps while they're joining us. But hey, guys, you know, we had a great show again today. We had obviously Michael Lewis coming on to talk about Butler and Gonzaga, and let's start right there with you guys. What a great situation! What a great event going on in Indianapolis. Historic Hinkle, two ranked teams: number 13 Butler, number 8 Gonzaga. What you would call middle to lower size universities. ESPN's going to be there with their game. I mean, it's a pretty exciting time to be a part of Butler basketball.
Oh, it's going to be a great game. Like the Bulldogs right now are rolling. A lot of people thought, you know, all the national pundits were saying that well, Butler's going up in a class when they go to the A-10 from the Horizon. They haven't missed a beat. They're playing the same way they always have, and now they're playing another kind of the Butler of the West, like, you know, Butler's the Gonzaga of the Midwest. So that's a dream matchup for those two programs to kind of mirror each other, the way their coaches have stayed, the way they put together their team. So that would be good basketball tomorrow evening at 9.
Hey, one thing to note, Trevon Blewett from Park Tudor, the sensational junior that led Park Tudor over Pike last weekend in the Marion County tournament, is going to be attending that game tomorrow. He scored 30 in that final game against Pike, and I think that he has really got Butler high on his list, and it would be a great catch for Butler if they could rein him in. I know he's highly recruited by all the major programs here in the state and in surrounding areas, and some of the others, Duke and some others, are taking a look at him as he's a great student as well. So just another little added tidbit for people that are watching that game on TV tomorrow to look for him in the stands. They may be showing him.
And, Donnie, that's a great point, because this, as I asked Michael about this, and you know, Michael just did a great job of answering it, not only for the athletic or the basketball, but for Butler University as a whole from a recruiting process of students. But I still got to believe this is a great opportunity to show the East Coast and show the rest of the Midwest and wherever they need to recruit, Butler is for real, and they're not going away anytime soon. And if they can land one or two of these really top recruits out of the Indianapolis area or expanded, you're talking about a program that can really, guys, can really be on the national map for several years to come.
Oh, I think so. Go ahead, Donnie. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say I agree wholeheartedly, and Butler's made a major commitment to take that program to the top level. A lot of your listeners may not know this either, or some may, but they're putting a lot of money into Hinkle. So over the next few years, Hinkle is going to be upgraded without, they say, losing that historical feel. But, boy, you upgrade that stadium and get the exposure that they're really getting, and I think there's going to be a lot of attraction to come out and play for them.
All right, we had Mike Ballinger on. All of us grew up around Mike. We saw him play. We went on to University of Kentucky in Western Kentucky. I thought it was a great interview. I thought Mike was able to really express how it was growing up in Jasper, what are the things that led him to try to be the best he could be, and also answered some questions about, you know, where his career ended up. What was baseball a possibility? Did he ever have arm problems? I thought it was a really – how he looked at his senior year when he didn't play football. I thought Mike did a great job of talking to us and really expressing – how he viewed growing up in Jasper and his career in general.
I thought it was great because, like all of you guys that I'm talking on the phone with, being a younger guy, he always treated little kids great when they come and want to shoot around or throw the ball around, and that's not always the case with older guys and with younger guys. And I thought it was great, and I think a lot of guys right now and girls should listen to that podcast because he displayed or – made a point about the pride he had in playing for his high school team in the various sports and what that jersey and what that representation of his school meant. I thought that was great. Even before you guys got to, you know, the basketball and the football and the baseball, which he was so good at, just the pride. And maybe you don't look at that when you play and you look back on it later, how much it meant to you. So I thought that was great.
I agree, Kurt. I mean, I had the pleasure of guarding him as a sophomore and a lot of times as a junior. And I just think that he really helped my game just practicing against him. People don't realize that back in 1980, 81, we didn't have the three-point line. And some of the shots that Mike Ballinger hit were just incredible. I mean, as far as distance, I mean, they were literally bombs. And I just think about that Southridge final game of the 1981 sectional and some of the shots he hit. I mean, he had, what, 37, 38 that night, probably could have had 50-something mm-hmm. if there would have been a three-point line.
That was an unbelievable performance.
Not remembers, he had a great turnaround jump shot from 15, 18 feet. He'd come down and back you down one step and turn around, and he had those long arms and strong body, upper body, and had a great turnaround jump shot.
Right. He was a – I mean, he could handle the basketball, and he remembered the behind-the-back passes. I don't know if Coach May was always fond of those, but, I mean, he could handle the ball, and then he went to Western and became a point guard on some decent teams with some NBA guys. So – the total package of just all the sports and talking to him later on, and I've read some articles about Mike, and, you know, he talked about how he may have wanted to handle things differently when he played in college. If he, again, the old, if I knew then what I know now about coming to practice every day and not knowing what it took to compete every day or to prepare every day or to practice hard every day. And, it's a great, you know, lesson for kids to take that to heart right now. I mean, he was just unbelievable. I know you guys know because you guys lived it every day.
Well, you know, Kurt, I think the big thing you mentioned it earlier. This show, this is what our show is really about. We're not just interviewing somebody and saying, "Oh, you had 20 points that game. Do you think you can win tonight?" We want to know what they're thinking and why they're thinking and what would they do differently and how would they prepare. And that's when you said young people should listen to this podcast, you're exactly right, because Mike Ballinger, who was a high-level athlete, major college basketball player, also baseball, just a step away from possibly pro baseball, he's telling you how you need to look at it. Play multiple sports you enjoy playing. Get out there. Work on your game. How to look at decisions that you might make. Don't separate yourself from something because you think you're going to be better off doing it. I mean, I can think of different players through the careers. I know when Matt Mauch played for me, here's a guy that started his junior year and played on the varsity his sophomore year, chose to concentrate on football and baseball. His senior year, thought he would have a better chance getting drafted. Matt ended up getting drafted. I think he would have got drafted anyway, but then he ends up going on and playing football and winning a national championship. My point is this. I think he could have played basketball that year, helped his teammates. We would have had a much better year because we had spent invested time with Matt, and he still would have had all those things happen for him. Nothing against Matt. He made a similar decision that Mike Ballinger made. But when you look back, I'm sure Matt might think, you know, I should have finished it out with basketball and made that a part of my high school career. Again, if you're good, and I think Mike said it best, and I've said this, I say this all the time. If you're good and you get out there and play, they will find you, especially in this day and age with social media, with the Coach K and Joe show. If you're good, people are going to know about you.
Yeah, you made the best point of all because, and I thought you were in my head, which that's kind of scary. When these guys say that they're not going to play the next sport because they're going to work on sport B or sport C. So you're telling me at 3:00 you're going to go work until 5:45, the time that you would be practicing basketball. You're going to do that for baseball. You're going to work all that time, 5 days a week, on that sport. If you do, more power to you, and you will be a better baseball player. But that never happens. You hit the nail right on the head. If you do spend that time on that other sport, you will be good. But that never happens. And so you might as well join your teammates, join your classmates, and play that other sport and have those memories that some guys never get, or you look back on and wish you had them back.
Yeah, and again, when a young man or young lady makes that decision, I don't fault them at all. I mean, that's the decision they make. But I really would encourage them to think about what they think, you know, they're giving up. Well, I have a little more free time. Well, not really. Go out and play and participate and create those relationships and memories. that last a long time. Hey, we're going to be ending our normal show, live show, in just a couple minutes, and we will continue on the podcast. Just want to make our listeners aware of that. You can listen to the rest of the show on podcast. I do want to bring this up to Don and Kurt. And, Kurt, we can start with you, and Don, you can jump in after that. Let's just talk about the IU freshman at this point in the season. I know I have some specific thoughts on it, and I'm going to hold mine till you two give them. But let's talk about the IU freshman right now and where you think they are as their progress and where they fit and that type of thing. Kurt, go ahead.
You start with Farrell, and I think he's doing a really good job. He's given that team something they haven't had, that burst in the backcourt. You know, he doesn't really turn the ball over that much. His outside shot, a lot of people question that, but he had a big one the other night in the second half. And I think he's fine. As far as those other guys, I don't think they have that defined role, or I don't know if they know what they're supposed to do or what the coaches know what they're supposed to get out of those guys, you know, some of those bigger kids. But I thought Hollowell played pretty decent the other day against Wisconsin. But, you know, it's always a work in progress. But I think about now, if you expect those guys to play, they've got to come into some kind of role and some kind of form if they're going to be factors down the stretch.
Well, I agree with Kurt with regards to Yogi. I think early in the year he was turning the ball over, and I think
right.
He's been settling down and starting to understand how he needs to play to take care of the ball and still be productive as the point guard. And he does give IU a burst that they haven't had. I think the best is yet to come with him. I think the other freshmen are, quite frankly, playing like freshmen. I think Jeremy Hollowell has had his issues with sitting out three games. And the other thing about Jeremy, you know, he is quite a talented ball player, but I just don't believe he looks like he's having much fun out there. I don't know if that's his personality or if he's frustrated with regards to playing time or role or school or what have you, but he just looks like he is not enjoying the game. And, you know, your little lead into this segment, Coach, about the one guy quipping about, hey, just go out and have some fun and no, we got to work hard. I think you got to do both. I think you got to work hard, but you got to enjoy it. And he just doesn't look like he's enjoying it. And I think with regards to Connor and Peter Jerkin is just, I think he's more of a project, and Connor, he's got a lot to learn as well.
Well, I'll just jump in and give you my thoughts, and I've been watching them, and I listened to everybody before this season started, and you know, the thing about YouTube and social media is that we get to see the highlights and clips of these guys play, and we just get to see the good stuff they did. And we need to remember that they're playing against high school players that a lot of times aren't at their level. But let me just jump in on a few of these guys. I think Yogi Farrell has tremendous upside. I think I love how he saw where he was at and started to improve. And it's not just his ball handling and decision-making. His shot, I thought he was lost on his footwork, going into his shot and his follow-through, and he found it. And now he's telling some of these teams, if you're going to double up on someone else, then I can hit the shot, I can take you to the basket. So his game continues to get better. I think if there's a concern, it's his size, and he's going to have to make sure he positions himself well on the court as much as possible, using his speed and quickness to his advantage so they don't take advantage of his lack of size. Hollowell, Don, I kind of agree with you. I don't know if it's not having fun. I think he's not sure where he fits. I think he's trying to be a perimeter player, and maybe that's not where he should be right now. I think, you know, Kurt said defining their roles a little bit more. I think that in getting them out there and playing this game, I agree with him. I think some roles need to be defined. And on Hollowell, I think him more than anything, if we're going to see some fruit to his labor. And you know, if you can't go out in the game and have fun or look like you're having fun, then you got a problem. You know, practice isn't always fun, and all the meetings aren't always fun. But when you get in the game, That's when it should be fun. But I feel like he's not sure where he should be out there. And I think he's trying to be more of a perimeter player than maybe what he needs to be at this time. Jerkin, Perea, I think they're just really good. They were really good at what they did on the prep school and high school level, but I think this is a whole new ball game, and I think it becomes even more important to define their roles. Hanner, this is where you're going to play. This is what you're going to do. He's not going to be the Superman you saw on some of the YouTube takes, at least not now. And he's got to work hard and develop his game and expand his game. And, Dan Dockage mentioned several months ago, and again, I like Dan, but I don't agree with everything he says. He felt like Hanner had a lot of improvement, that he was not the player that people thought he was coming into IU, and he had a ways to go. But again, this isn't prep school and this isn't high school. This is the Big Ten.
You're right. I agree. I just, again, some of those guys, I think sometimes we do expect a lot from freshmen nowadays. Maybe it's the point where they just have to settle in for a year or two. But it's tough to sit back if you're a fan, if you're a coach, when you have to win right now and expect those guys to perform like it.
Yeah, don't forget, the years ago, they wouldn't even let freshmen play. They had a freshman team. So, they're going to take some time to adjust. The ultra-good ones can move in there and make an impact, but as they get to the next level, that game is so much speeded up. It's a lot faster. It's a lot more physical, and it just takes some adjustment and sometimes longer for some of them.
Speaking of speeding up, guys, what happened in a game that was clearly going to be defined by the pace of the game? And we saw this against Butler. It just looked like the Hoosiers could not find a way to speed up the play of Wisconsin, and they just allowed them to create the tempo of the game. And, hey, don't get me wrong, Wisconsin hit some pretty crazy shots, but the tempo of the game from almost start to finish favored Wisconsin at IU. Come on, guys. What went on there?
Well, I think, Coach, one thing cannot forget about is the fact that IU missed 34 shots that night. We hit two or three shots, we win the game. So, as much as everybody's, talking about the tempo and all that kind of stuff, we just didn't play well. We didn't shoot well. And the difference would have been two or three shots. I mean,
You didn't shoot well. You're not going to shoot well every night. How many times have we talked about on this show that you're not going to shoot well every night, so you got to do some other things? So by allowing Wisconsin to control the tempo of the game, it made those two or three shots even more important for IU. Why not speed this game up, maybe create some opportunities off the fast break, transition turnovers, force them into some shots that they don't want to take, maybe quicken that pace a little bit, and then those two or three shots – aren't as important as they were in that tempo of the game. Just my thoughts.
Well, I thought they tried to, in the second half, there were five different possessions where Wisconsin came down. They tried about five different sets, and they couldn't get anything. And like Donnie mentioned, the guy beats the shot clock on a fallaway jumper. Trey Jackson hit a wild shot, and Indiana doesn't hit their shots. They hit those couple. Everybody talked about the defense that Indiana didn't play. I thought it was really good, especially when the game came down the line, and I don't know if you're going to be able to speed somebody up that chews all that shot clock up. Maybe in a game
start
that
on the other end of the court. You start speeding them up on the other end of the court. I don't think IU played bad defense. I just think that they allowed Wisconsin to have the tempo of the game that Wisconsin had to have, not only at home but on the road even more, to be in that game and have a chance to win it at the end. Like Brad Stevens said in that game, we just want to hang around. Well, that's what Wisconsin wanted to do, hang around. And they did, and they ended up getting the win at IU. And, guys, what was the first loss in how many games on the home court? Is it the end of the world? No, it's not. Is the sky falling? No, it's not. I'm just talking about, because you know where I'm going, guys. Why were we pressing people with 3 minutes left up 35 in the non-conference? Why were we doing that? Well, you guys told me we were doing it to get ready for the Big Ten. Okay. Well, why didn't we do it against Wisconsin?
I have no comeback to that because I think.
Well, if I had a mind reader for Coach Green, I'd be able to answer that. But I do agree with you, Coach, that we got to use our strengths to our advantage, and one of those is that we should be able to press them more. We should be able to come at and play offensive basketball. I mean, taking it to them more than us reacting to what they're doing, and they lulled us into that, and I think it had to do, going back to my point about missing 34 shots, again, you hit a few of those in a run, all of a sudden the tempo speeds up, things are changing, and you got them on their heels as opposed to you backed up on your heels. So, you know, part of the game is you got to hit shots, and IU just didn't do it.
I think so. I think that's exactly right. And, you know, everybody, the people that watch the games, they want to talk about, you know, not throwing the ball into Cody, not getting it down. Kenny, you go back, Coach, and you watch the tape or watch the video. How many times does he go in there hard and post up like he wants it? It's not all on the perimeter guys about throwing it into the post. Sometimes he lets guys that shouldn't even have a clue to guard him in down there. And if you're going to be that elite player, and do we want Cody on our team? Yeah, we do. But I think some of it goes on him to command the ball. I'm not saying he's not playing hard. I'm not saying he's not doing what he's supposed to. But, you know, it's not all those perimeter guys to throw that ball in there. And that's the biggest complaint some people talk about, them not getting the ball in there.
I don't disagree with you, Kurt. I think if there's a phase of his game right now he's searching for, it's a mental part. It has nothing to do with his IQ of basketball or anything like that. It's just that mental part that pushes him to say, I've got to go get this. I've got to do this. I've got to make this happen. And it's a will thing. He's got to find that next gear, that urgency, that will to get it done. Okay, let's move on because I don't want it to turn into an anti-IU because that's not what I'm talking about. But
no,
Kurt, your name is Manti, and Don, your name is Taylor.
One last point on this. Will Sheehy doesn't score in the last two games.
Yes.
0 points.
Okay,
yes.
Don, but what has been his
MO
the whole year? I go in the game, and I either shoot, I don't do anything.
Hey, he's got it. Time out. Hey, this isn't Jackson Street in the 70s and 80s. You guys quit fighting.
No, I either go in the game, I shoot, or I don't do anything. And I've said this before. Yes, he can hit shots, but he's got to learn to do other things on the court if he's not hitting shots. Will Sheehy is too talented and too athletic to just be a guy that gets the ball in his hand.
I agree, and it's really weird how this is all playing out. And I don't know if Coach Green knows how to handle all this because all everybody wanted to talk about was how is he going to distribute all these minutes? He's got all these guys. We're coming to find out some of these guys aren't giving him what he needs out there, and his bench is getting really, really short, and he doesn't have any answers because of what Coach is talking about and even what Donnie's talking about, him not hitting shots or doing the other things, and he's not the only one on that bench. So I always found it interesting how everybody was talking about how deep they were. Now it's looking like, you know, they're pushing some buttons to try to get some answers.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Anyway,
all right, Manti and Taylor.
No. My gosh, no.
Yeah, let's talk about that because I heard Coach K and Joe talking about that just a little bit earlier. And you know, I have a lot of respect for Teo and what he's done as a player, and I hear he's a good student. I've never met the young man, but one of the things that I just cannot believe is how you can get duped like that, particularly this is a factual thing. I went back. I saved the article in Sports Illustrated on Monte Teo and, you know, this whole thing that he was going through. They had a great article earlier in the fall about him and his grandmother's death and the death of his fake made-up girlfriend and all that, but at the time we all thought she was real. And in the second or third paragraph, it states verbatim that Teo has dated this girl for over a year. Now, wait a minute, you guys. When you date a girl, you don't email her and send text to her or talk to her a little bit on the telephone. If you're dating a girl, at least in my definition, and I know I'm old school.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
But you physically have been with her. You know, you've been on a date, at dinner. You've done something other than this. And here's my thing. He may have got catfished or punked or whatever you want to call it, but he allowed it. He allowed this thing to grow and be used in such a way that it would be to, I think, his and teams and the school's advantage. He had many opportunities to pull the plug and say, hey, wait a minute. She's a friend of mine. She's not my girlfriend. We haven't dated. We're friendly. That kind of thing. But nobody put the brakes on that. The other thing is when he found out, and this has been checked, on December the 6th, I think, after
yes.
that date, he had two other interviews where
right.
he referenced his girlfriend on December 8th and December 11th. He had two other interviews. So to me, and I had this long conversation with my wife about this too, it makes no sense to me how he didn't allow this thing at a minimum to keep growing when he had the opportunity. And I know he would have had to be a little bit embarrassed, Coach, but he could have pulled the plug.
Something smells in the old Patoka Pond, if you know what I mean.
The carp are laying dead on the side of the banks of the Patoka. No doubt about it, and they're stinking.
You have a radio show like I do. I mean, it's all we've been talking about, and it's amazing because it's almost unreal that this is going on. I mean, how in the world can this happen? I mean, and Donnie's right. I mean, I think he really did enter into this long-distance internet relationship, and he found out that I've been duped, I've been catfished or whatever, but it was rolling downhill as far as the publicity was concerned. Neither A, he liked it, or no, knew that if he came clean, there would be more embarrassment, so he just let it go, and it's coming back to bite him.
So all the way to Sports Illustrated's cover. Two things, guys, and get your comment on them. One, Notre Dame knows about this in late November, says we were going to give Manti Te'o a chance to talk to his parents. Baloney. They didn't want it to blow up during the championship BCS game.
Exactly.
Two,
and Heisman.
Swarbuck,
AD,
I think I pronounced his name right, who I think does a great job. I sure hope he didn't put his toe in the ringer by putting himself out there for Manti. I'm not sure Manti's as innocent in this as the AD maybe in that. I mean, the guy cried in the news conference. The AD. I mean, I just hope that he doesn't get suckered into this. Thoughts?
Well, you know, you're Jack Swarbrick. You're a powerful Indianapolis attorney. You helped bring the Super Bowl to Indy, and you're the Notre Dame AD, and you're up at a press conference talking about a fake girlfriend that has died. I mean, where have you came from and where are you going? You know, this didn't get as much – I mean, this would get more attention than the guy that was on the list that died under Brian Kelly and under Swarbrick. They've had another – they had a rape case that the woman committed suicide. What rape wasn't up at the podium crying over that? I mean, so, again, like Kenny said, he just put his reputation on the line for going to bat for Te'o. So – you know, where it goes from here, nobody knows. But, I mean, Notre Dame, Te'o, I mean, I've read the thing like 10 times, and I still can't figure it out.
It's unbelievable.
You know,
it really is. It's so mind-boggling that this guy that goes to Notre Dame finds himself in this mess. And
you guys had no problem at Jasper High School in the halls with the girls. You guys, even Joe had no problem. This guy is Notre Dame, and he's the best linebacker in the country. You're telling me he's got to get on the internet?
Well, let me look at this from a Purdue perspective just for a second. First of all, I want to say the only thing that would have made the story better is if the girlfriend's name would have been Fawn Leibowitz. Did any of you guys get that one? And number two, at what point do you not at least get on FaceTime or something and make sure you're not talking to some 40-year-old, 350-pound fat man?
Well, let's not go into physical characteristics, but it just is kind of amazing.
It's great. I mean, it brought back the great memories of three different people. You guys will know who Ivan Renko is.
Yeah.
remember when Knight and Dockage came up with that guy because there was rumors about who they were recruiting and those guys didn't like that, and all these Clark Gibbons and all these guys were trying to figure out who IU was recruiting. So they just made up this guy's name. So all these guys are going around the country and the world trying to find out who this guy is, and they actually filed reports on this fictitious guy. That's how crazy the recruiting was. You remember Sid Finch, the April Fool's Sports Illustrated that they had in 85 where they wrote about this guy that threw 180 miles an hour, but it was George Clinton wrote it, but it was a big fake. That got a lot of attention. And, of course, the infamous Brady Bunch episode where Jan made up the fake boyfriend, George Glass. So those three guys are the most famous made-up people other than this Manti Te'o situation.
The Brady Bunch. You got to love it. Okay, let's jump to the next thing. And the next thing is we got the football playoffs. Who do you want to see in that Super Bowl? You want to see the Harbaughs against the Harbaughs?
I do. I think it would be great. You know, for the pride that Jack, who coached all those years in college football as an assistant going around the country, had all those great years at Western. He was an assistant coach at Michigan under Shem Beckler. To have your sons in the biggest game, and maybe we can get an IU game in the afternoon. You'd have Crean coaching. You'd have the Harbaugh guys going. That's about $28 million a year in coaching salaries, where Harbaugh probably, Jack probably made $30,000, $40,000 a year when he started. So I'm going for all the Harbaugh.
Yeah, me too. I vote for that.
It would be interesting for sports to have.
Plus, I don't care for Tom Terrific. He's won enough Super Bowls. He's been there enough times. Let somebody else have a chance.
I've met Jack Harbaugh, and he is one heck of a guy. So to have his two competitive sons and maybe his son-in-law all playing to get, on the same day and two of them playing against each other for the biggest prize in football and some think in all of sports, that would be pretty exciting. Once again, I want to mention that my father-in-law, Larry Bartley, passed away, and we'll be having his funeral this weekend. And Larry and Shirley did a lot in the local Jasper area for youth sports, baseball support, softball, and different things. And he's a good father-in-law, and we'll miss him. I know he's in a better place. But that's what I want to end it with, and I'm going to have to move on. And we had a great show, and appreciate you coming on, Kurt. Appreciate you coming in and contributing, Don, out of Indy, and your Pike team did not last as the best team in Indy very long, did they?
Nope. I predicted it, too. I said it could change overnight, and it did as of Saturday. My top two teams are still Tech and Carmel. Carmel beat Pike in the middle of this week, so Pike's actually lost two in a row now, and Tech's going to be in the finals of the city tournament probably Monday night, probably facing Cathedral, as they are playing in the semifinals tomorrow night, both teams. So we'll see. Maybe by next week there'll be a new number one.
All right. It's the Raiders.
Okay. Yeah, Coach, tonight Heritage Hills and Southridge, both teams undefeated in the league. It should be good at Huntingburg Memorial. We've got Jasper and Forest Park at Cabby. And, again, you know, if you listen to the podcast this afternoon, go out to Cabby. Let's fill that thing for once. Two teams that are playing really hard, and the records don't show it. Forest Park's got a new dynamic right now under Jeff Witherly, who takes over for Nathan Hawkins. Cats have won two straight. Also, talked to Joe a little bit. I'll talk to him later about it. Coach Kelly Murphy stepped down after 8 years as Southridge football coach, and he's done a great job with that program, one of the most respected football coaches, not only Southern Indiana, but perhaps the state, the way he led the Raiders with both on the field and the way he balanced the assistant principalship and the head football coach for 8 years. He's probably the only guy to do that in the state in football and basketball and being the assistant principal. Hopefully we can get Murph on the show and talk about his years of coaching the Raiders. And Joe knows he's a class guy, 110%. And I'm a guy that's going to, you know, I'm just going to miss him a great deal because he ran a program that I enjoyed covering, and I cannot always say that about some of the stuff that we do, but with Murph, it's been unbelievable, and I just wish him the best. I know football, hopefully it won't suffer, but I know
Southridge High School as a whole is going to benefit for having him as a full-time vice principal or maybe even a principal.
Well, we definitely want to get him on. He has done a great job, and even though Southridge was a rival for me all the time, I have much respect for the work he did with that football program. Hey, Kurt, Coach Hawkins steps down at Forest Park after a really nice run for the first 3 years and struggle a little bit here. As a guy who did resign as coach at Jasper during the season but waited till the end of the year before I stepped away, can you shed a little more light on why in the middle of the season stepping away?
I think he had some situations with his family that he needed to be home a little bit more and took care of some business there. I don't think it had anything to do with the basketball because I think he'd be the last person that would quit on a basketball team if it was basketball in the middle of the season. And he's a lay coach as well. He's a salesperson for an area business, Wynn Electric, and they have been great with him as far as letting him coach and do the things he needed to do there. But, you know, kind of like Murph a little bit in a certain circumstance here, just a little bit. Maybe it was too much to do coaching work and have your family time. And there's some other things swirling around with that too. But, you know, Hawk's a good guy too, and he did a great job. I mean, it wasn't easy taking over for Tom Veach after those state championships. And he guided that team and that program at a high level to a couple of semi-states where they fell to Blewett and Paul Bate and Farrell at Park Tudor a couple different times, and they had that four overtime game. And, you know, Hawk had them, you know, going a little bit, but kind of like Jasper this year, those two teams mirrored each other. They struggled this year, but I don't think he was walking away from the basketball team to a certain extent. But, you know, that's just the way it goes, I guess, when you got some outlying circumstances.
Well, we certainly respect his privacy, and we are not insinuating anything. Coaching is tough. It takes tremendous amount of time. It's physical, it's emotional, it's mental, and I really mean that. If you're really coaching, you're out there physically putting in your time and effort on the court. It's emotional because of both the highs and lows and the time you spend away from other things, and it's mental because of preparation for every game and every practice. Nobody just walks in and throws out the ball. You know, it's crazy when people think that's all you do. It's not. It's a tough job. So we wish him the best of luck in what he needs to do. Anything else, guys, you want to jump on before we end it?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, Kenny, related to your the passing of your father-in-law, Larry, just on behalf of myself and our family, I know a lot of the listeners, you know, the best. Our prayers are with you and Janet and the rest of the Bartley and Kleiser sides of the family. And, you know, for me, I played in the youth softball program growing up in Jasper, and B&G Tire was a major backer of that. And I know Joe touched on that a couple of shows ago. But it really meant a lot to me. You know, got to know Larry and Shirley really well even before you married Janet. But super, super guy, super family. And I just wanted to extend my condolences and let you know we're all praying for you.
Well, thank you, Don. I appreciate that. Guys, get out, support local high school basketball and other sports going on, whether it's boys or girls, and go with the right attitude and get and cheer and vent a little bit, but let's keep these things safe out here. We don't need what's going on in some other areas, fights and shootings and things like that. Let's make it a fun atmosphere, exciting, and create great memories. We thank you for being with us this week.
Tao a girlfriend. Would you, somebody find Tao a girlfriend.
Bon Leibowitz.
We need to work on that. You need to be fine for Manti.
I know you want to wrap things up, but yeah, I mean, but maybe he had the right idea. How many times do you think he got yelled at? You know, you get yelled at about putting the seat back down, messing up the bathroom. You know, like you guys get, and like I get. You know, it's
save
fun.
Money. More time with your buddies.
No shopping. No big time shopping trips. I mean, maybe he's onto something.
I know.
Hey, folks, thanks for being with us. Everybody be blessed. You've been listening to Coach K and Joe Show.
The following presentation of the Coach K and Joe Show was brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Fence Company. Join us next Friday from 11 to 1 for the next show. Until then, visit www.jaspertodayonline.com or go to iTunes to listen to podcasts of past shows. See you next week.